Well, say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
Welcome to Another Movie Podcast, a show that learns French to escape tyrannical rule, only to find themselves being hazed at a vet school. Sucks. I'm Oscar, and with me today only is...
Raphael.
And if you don't get those references, they are about the movies we're reviewing today. This is episode number 25. Speaking of those films we're reviewing today, we're doing how many films, Raph?
Six,
that's right, minus... Three, so three of them. We shall be reviewing as part of our marathon, current marathon, on its tail end. We have like four left. We'll be reviewing the French film Persepolis, which came out in 2007. We'll also move on to an indie newer release called Raw, R-A-W, Raw, not as in wrestling, nor as in football. Is that a football term too? Right.
Yeah, well, no, it's WWE Raw. That's what it is.
That's what it is. Okay, my bad. I don't know anything about wrestling.
Sure, no problem.
And that is a French horror film.
Yeah. Veterinarian. Out. Not a vet as in like a veteran.
That's what I said, vet school.
Yeah, I know. So
right.
Like,
there's no veterinarian.
When I read the description, yeah. I was like, oh, they're vets. Like, oh, okay, it's going to be a military thing. And I was like, nope.
No. get.
Nope.
That's funny. That's when someone says like, oh, I hung out with a minor yesterday. Oh, how old was he? Like, no, like I'm like from a minor.
Right, exactly. Like, right.
Well, right, yeah. Context. And we'll end our review with a fresher, newer film out everywhere today. It Comes at Night. So we're going to have fun with that one. Actually, we're going to have fun with all three of these films, I think. Actually, more as they go along. I think I have more to talk about as they
I
go
would
along.
Say so, yes.
Right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Anyway, you can send, here's the information for you. You can send all feedback and any questions and whatnot, or your hate mail. Send it to podmoviecast@gmail.com. I'm the only one reading it, but if it's about Roth or Luke, I'll send it directly to them.
You can always send it to @BlindNoir on Twitter.
He's not
any
even
hate mail,
he's
anything
not even
at all.
Here.
Not a problem. That's our actual like direct one.
Right. We don't even like our own Twitter.
We haven't
we like
changed our Twitter
Blind
handle,
Noirs.
Really. It's
right.
Just @BlindNoir.
Right. Everything is @BlindNoir.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Father.
It's BlindNoir, in case if you didn't know how to spell noir.
Yeah. He says a noir.
Like, right, yeah, sometimes
it fucks
yeah.
people up.
Sure.
Otherpodcast.com is you can find the website for all the hub, the central information hub for everything we put out.
But on Twitter, it's @BlindNoir.
Right, I was going to say the other Twitter, but right. I won't say it now.
But you won't.
Nope. All this shit is on every detail shown up for every podcast episode you download.
And we're on Facebook.
Yes, we are. I never fucking
know.
Look at it.
I'm just saying.
We're terrible at this shit.
I'm better.
We need to find like someone to do it with us for us or something. Someone unpaid.
No, we can do it.
No, we have to do like a Steve Zissou like unpaid interns and shit. Like we'll give them.
Well, no, hold on. Okay, every intern is unpaid.
I know, but no, some internships get paid. That's what.
Then
you
it's
say.
Not an internship.
But that's what they call it.
Right.
They can still like still a 6 week thing, you know, whatever.
Sure.
I'm just saying we need some.
They're not getting paid.
No, we're not.
And technically, there's nine workers. You can make them do whatever the fuck you want.
Stand on your head.
Exactly.
That's the worst I could think of in the moment.
That's the standing
yep.
on your head.
Yep.
I'm glad that's the worst thing you could think
Let
of.
Let the blood rush to your face.
We seem very, what's it called? Nice.
If you notice our good mood, it's because Luke isn't here. No, I'm kidding. He's in Alaska
and
hiding
because
away.
Because Luke won't be here for a while.
For a long while.
JK.
Some JK. Nah, JK. All right, so let's talk about what we've been watching. For Christ's sake, Ralph, you're going to start us off today. You got a movie from the 1900s?
Okay.
That could be 1999.
Right, exactly. I was about to say, I was like, is that a good choice?
Early
1900s. I saw a movie that was before the talkies.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a movie called Sunnyside. It is a short film. It is a Charlie Chaplin film, guys. Or Charles Chaplin, as IMDb so likes me to
Chucky Chap. That's what they call him. His friends
it
call
came
him.
Out in 1919, thus the 1900 reference that backfired on Oscar. I'm going to read this long-ass description. Charlie works on a farm from 4 a.m. to late at night. He gets his food on the run, milking cows into his coffee, holding a chicken over a frying pan to get fried eggs. He loves the neighbor's daughter, Edna, but is disliked by her father. He rides a cow into stream and is kicked off. Unconscious, he dreams of a nymph dance. Back in the reality, a city slicker is hurt in a car crash and is being cared for by Edna. When Charlie is rejected after being attempted to imitate the slicker, the result is ambiguous, either tragic or a happy ending.
So you described the whole short, basically.
Basically, I described the whole short. There's a little sentence at the very end that I did not describe. It's a weird movie. What's it called? So, yeah. And It was interesting. It was on the Turner Classic Movies, so whenever I can't find anything on TV, I just go to Turner Classic Movies and see what's on.
Hmm.
And I just happened to catch, like, it was like 3-5 minutes in or something like that, and I was like, I'm watching this.
If you switch those habits, like, when there's nothing on Turner Classic Movies, I go on TV.
What's funny is that I'll leave Turner Classic Movies on a lot of the times, and I'll just end up watching shit like that, and I'll just watch, oh, yeah, I'm watching this, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, I'll start a movie, and I'll be like, I have no clue where I am in this movie, and I just need to change the channel.
Yeah, yeah.
So, regardless, this is really funny. My son was watching it, and I sent a video to Oscar and a lot of people that he was laughing with at the antics in this movie.
Right, it's a very physical performance.
Right, exactly. So it was quite funny. What ends up happening is like this: there's a lot of crazy stuff. We were talking. I was before we started recording. It's a very it's all motions, right? Everything he's doing is all body language, right? So everything he does is funny through the body. So he's moving all these crazy jitters and everything like that. And not only him, not only Charlie Chaplin, but every character is, or every actor here.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and then you get a line of description of what's happening or their dialogue in text form. So, yeah. Like, you just add it onto there. And then you read it, A, old-timey, because it looks old-timey. B, with this, like, weird voice. Because you have to, like, and then...
And back then, that font was considered revolutionary. I don't know. But
right.
This is a great movie. I think your son will love.
Yeah,
it's called 1 a.m. It's called like it's late, in, like, maybe 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. I forget which number. And it's just him being drunk in his house, being in the wrong house, fighting with the house.
That's funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah, I gotta watch that.
Just watch that.
So what's cool about this one is that basically he's the no good helper, whatever farmer guy, and he really is in love, and she's in love with him, and blah blah blah. What ends up happening is that this family can't pay rent, and their rent, the guy who's collecting rent, or the city slicker guy, supposedly, right? He's coming to collect, and he's like, we can't pay rent, and he's like, well, I'm gonna get in her pants then, if you can't pay rent, you know, gotta pay another way. And there's this weird, crazy scene. He tries to do that to one of the people, right? And then the husband comes by, and the husband beats the fuck out of him, which is hilarious. Because the husband just doesn't look... He looks like a pushover, but the guy's like... He's like a small guy, mm-hmm. and just a complete pushover. And the guy's like laughing at him. He's like, this guy can't beat me up. Oh, he beats him up. And it's a really funny thing. But like, what ends up happening is that the other guy can't pay. And he's like, listen, you want in part of this? Like, I'm going to give you... Like, if she marries me, like, we'll call it even on everything. Like, you can... Like, you never have to pay me, obviously. Like, everything's all golden, right? So that ends up happening. And they... what's it called? They, you know, they... He's like, of course, I'll we're trading milk or cows for my wife's hand in marriage and shit like that. So they let that bitch go. They let that go, and all the antics ensue and all that stuff. Like, that's towards the end. But yeah, it was still funny. And what's funny is that my son, obviously, he would understand that if it was in English. But the fact that it wasn't, and he was just laughing at it. And yeah. I was laughing at it, and my wife was kind of appalled at some of the stuff that was going on. But
because they couldn't vote.
Right, yeah. It was cool. It's cool. The fact that my son loves something from almost 100 years ago.
97, about.
Yeah. So that's amazing. And it was still fun. It was fun to watch. Yeah, I mean, it's lackluster and a lot of stuff going on, but it's just funny to watch, and it was really cool. So that's Sunnyside. I already forgot what else I watched. But
saw a show.
Saw a show, right?
I know. We don't usually talk about shows.
Yeah, but I don't watch much movies.
Yeah.
So I've been watching Bosch on Amazon. So season 3, I talked about Bosch before on the other podcast, and I don't think I've got to mention it on this podcast yet, but, it's a fucking great show. It's one of those shows that, it's a detective show. So for a quick reference, I don't have an IMDb in front of me, but I'll pull up the guy's information and everything.
Hieronymus Bosch, detective of LA, usually Hollywood, homicide detective.
He is Hollywood.
Like old school type. He's, on the tail end of his career. So he's like a veteran.
He's been on the tail end of his career since season 1, so fuck that.
I'm saying that's what I said. Yeah,
he's a rough old-timer. Well, the actor is Titus Welliver.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
super great.
He's fucking amazing. And what I love about it is that he's this ex Special Forces.
Vietnam.
Not from Vietnam. He's
Right.
From the Desert Storm. They changed it.
Right. In the books, he's from Vietnam.
From the books, he's Vietnam.
He's a tunnel rat.
Right, exactly. And this one, he's from Desert Storm, and he actually served in Afghanistan. He did a tour. Like, they made him, like, really current, where he still did a tour from over there, because he wanted to help, like, train all the other guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they do up him. It's such a bingeable show. It's like, it's a detective show, if you think of any kind of, like, that cop show. But man, it's so fun to watch because
there's no gimmick to it. It really isn't. It's just character building, character caring, and like it's not just one case either. It's one domineering case almost per season. But there's like 50 things going on. There are multiple problems that stop the main case, that stop the progress of whatever.
I think what the show does a really good job of at is that we're watching his life at the moment of this case going
on. Yeah,
and his life has a lot of shit to do. He's a guy
teaching his kid how to drive.
Teaching his kid how to drive, making sure that he takes her from place to place. You know, so that's his family side of things. He's got his habits, or he's got his hobbies of like spying on people,
or spying on criminals who he hates that got away.
Law, and then not only that, but hey, guess what? He's got other cases to deal with also that he's already closed supposedly, but he's got to go to court for all those things. So he's got to deal with all those things.
Especially from last season, I think there was
the last season. But it's already like 3 years in the making, or 60 months later.
Right.
And it's just like he's dealing with a lot of shit, like personal things on his end, his main case, another detective's, two other detectives' cases that he touches bases on because he's the veteran, and he has a stake in their case as well. Yeah. It's crazy. Like he's a really busy guy, and we give like shit to like cops that don't do anything, and it feels like they don't do a lot of things. And it feels like their day ends really early. At the same time, I still have that problem, but he's doing a lot at the same time. Like, they're always busy, even though they doesn't feel like they are. And it's cool because you're just watching in the life of, and he's such a meticulous person. He's not by the book. He's total gut kind of guy, by instinct thing. But he knows that he's still doing things by the book as much as he can. But he honestly, I think he's to the point where it needs to get done, Mm-hmm. And that's the way he sees things. And then he lets his partner deal with the rest of it. Like, you deal the book part, you'll deal the book side. I deal the, I'm going to run a hunch that I know that's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool. I really love the show.
And if you're a book fan, not only is the show really great, but if you're a book fan and worried about like, oh, it's going to be the same, it's not really the same. They follow some main plots going on from book to book, but it's not A, in chronological, and B, a lot of details have changed, turn are changed, but the character core is the same. So if you are a book reader, you don't have to worry about, like, I can still spoil the show and you would be, like, it still be surprises, for example. And just put that little caveat. You have a last movie here.
Yes, the last movie I saw.
Going way back to the 90s.
Right. Again. I re-watched a movie that I haven't seen in a while. It's Major Payne. It's a quick description. A recently discharged major finds himself commanding a group of mismatched cadets. So he obviously goes into one of those military private schools. This is a 1995 movie, so a little bit more recent than my 1919 one. Starring Damon Wayans and Michael Ironside, for example. Quick look.
Yeah,
into
I think
that.
Ironside would have done anything for work back then.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So it's still funny. It's supposed to be funny. He has a voice with he does a voice with his actor with that, and he does his weird laugh, and he's got.
I haven't seen it in forever.
It's crazy. Like he's like. I mean, they make fun of him the whole time, and it's about building character to these kids, you know, to actually give them to get
are they
it
actual
to work.
Kids? What, like high
they're
school?
Kids? No,
or grade school?
It's all age, actually. It's technically grade school, and you have somebody who's like in eighth grade, almost high school. He looks like a high school kid, I would say, but he's like an eighth grade student.
Right.
All the way from like first grade. There's like all in between.
Right on.
And, you know, there's even a rap scene where they all.
Oh, of course, it's you the mid-90s.
Right, exactly. Where they all, what's it called, dance in march in formation and do their song, but they do it in rap style because that would fly by.
Have you seen the ending of The Addams Family? Also like a 95, 96 movie.
Yeah.
The closing credits is a rap song about The Addams Family. Oh, rap was everywhere. Hip-hop was on everything.
Oh,
for
sure.
Reason.
Yeah, yeah. So
ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's a movie. It's a family movie. It still was funny. It was still watchable, and I had fun still watching the movie. I own the movie on DVD. I never have seen it since I got it, but I just happened to be on HBO, I think, or Showtime. Stars. And I was just like, yeah, fuck it, I'll watch it, and it was still good. It was still good to watch. I mean, you knew it was going to happen. A super predictable movie. Nothing crazy, but it was still funny. It was some parts were still funny.
Kids ask your parents.
Like, it's one of those movies where I can totally watch every 10 years. I don't need to watch it every year, or not even every other year, because it would feel like it's a little bit too much for me. Yeah. But every 10 years, yeah, sounds good.
I mean, I might rewatch it one day.
Yeah, sure.
But the backlog of amazing movies stop
right, exactly.
racking me up here. My turn, I guess. I've been watching all new movies. Well, two new ones from last year. And they're in order from worst to best. That just happened to be the way I saw them, too. First is War Machine. Have you seen or heard of this movie, Ralph?
I think I've heard of it, but I'm not too sure.
Here's the description. It is a Netflix original film, came out about a month ago. A successful, charismatic four-star general, Glenn McMahon, leaps in like a rock star to command NATO forces in Afghanistan, only to be taken down by a journalist's no-holds-barred expose. Wow, that last part of the sentence, not really in that movie, but whatever. It's a film that stars Brad Pitt as the general, Anthony Hayes, John Magaro, Anthony Michael Hall plays the second in command, who is like this gruff asshole who has like temper problems. Emery Cohen, I want to mention, because he's in the pretty amazing show, oh my God, what's the name of it? The OA, which is a show that came out on Netflix late last year. And then it also has Topher Grace and a bunch of other actors. So you say you haven't heard of it. So this is like a military comedy or drama. I mean, it's a comedy. I want to say this movie is a failure for me. It doesn't, very little of it works for me. I barely didn't laugh as much. I think it needed to be either wittier or I don't know what. And Brad Pitt has this voice, not unlike his Inglourious Basterds voice, but a little more extreme. Like he leans into it a bit more, and he has it all the time. So it's either like when the scene gets dramatic, as it does at certain points in the movie, like it fails because he's still doing the voice. You can't take the guy seriously when a scene is dramatic, and it's like it has tone problems because of it. And I do want to mention,
when did this movie come out?
This year, it came out a month ago.
Huh.
It's a this year movie, you know. I want to say Meg Tilly plays his wife, and she is amazing. She has like two, three scenes with him, and one probably the best scene in the movie is with her and Brad Pitt, and it's an amazing scene. Very tender, like out of context, you would think it's an amazing scene. I mean, even with the context, still pretty good. And it's just too bad that the movie doesn't really hold up around that great scene. And so I gave it like half middle. Because I know that this movie is probably for someone. He does some of the Brad Pitt stuff in it. It's pretty funny. It stays with him like 90%. And this is a voiceover thing, which gets old, unfortunately. And I love the intro of all the characters. I would say if they cut half of his entourage or something, that would have been probably a little bit better. A lot of problems with it. But there is some fun to be taken out of it. So I give it a halfway thing to like.
So like a middle thumbs up?
Yeah, I guess. One thumb, I guess.
So you still give it a thumbs up.
Oh, okay. I guess two middle thumbs then. Two halfway. One facing east, one facing west. What do you think? This is a stupid question. Never ask me anything again. I have another film.
That's the answer.
Way better film. It's called Small Crimes. Seen that?
No, I don't even know what this is about. So I'm
another Netflix original movie. Because, you know, they bought a bunch of indie movies at Sundance.
This, oh, is that what they did?
I think these are what they are. Some of them, they made themselves. I don't know how it works exactly.
Sure.
But I know they bought a few. This is like their fourth. I've been watching them all because they're free. I'm not free, but they're on Netflix and they're right there to watch. You don't have to go to the theater. Let me read the description here. A disgraced former cop fresh off a six-year prison sentence for attempted murder returns home looking for redemption but winds up trapped in the same mess he left behind. And this stars Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. Sorry, I'm going to say that again. Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. He's Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Robert Forster, which I don't see enough. That guy's amazing. I want him in everything. Jackie Weaver plays his mom. Molly Parker also is in this. Gary Cole. A lot of all these actors, you'll be like, yeah, I've seen him in 50 things. And this is a much cooler movie. It's you know Macon Blair. Do you remember that?
Personally.
No, not, but you know who that is. He's the main star in Blue Ruin. The inept criminal trying to protect his family or whatever. He also directed, I mentioned this movie a few months ago. He did that movie with the long title, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore.
Yeah.
He's the one who directed and wrote that one. He wrote this one, didn't direct this one. So if you have this, it probably has the same sensibility to violence and small town crime as those movies. Because they all kind of have the same feel. Now, Blue Ruin is a little more of a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Okay.
And you probably think the same. But Small Crimes is very good. And I would say that Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, he's been in a few movies besides just Jaime Lannistering. And you would think that he couldn't be able to play this role, but he plays pathetic ex-cop really well. And so if you want to see that, how a handsome, beautiful Swedish or Norwegian, whatever he is, a man like him can look at his ugliest, watch this movie, and he's still fucking handsome, of course, but he is, like, the lowest, and he plays it really well. He, like, owns that skin, you know? And I would say that the performances are really excellent, has a great ending that for me almost came out of nowhere, but it makes complete sense when it came. And it has, like, these sheer moments of violence sometimes that it isn't, like, Drive, yeah. But it is, like, out of the blues most times. So, or it comes through a direct consequence that you think will happen maybe, like, 5 minutes later, but it doesn't happen. It happens right away. So, yeah, I recommend that. That's Small Crimes. Also... on Netflix. So this is another Netflix one, even though this is not from them, but it is on there. It is called The Wailing. Nope, nothing.
I've heard of The Wailing Wall, but...
but this is ridiculous?
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull it up, and I'm misspelling this thing on this phone because I'm an idiot. Anyway, The Wailing is a horror film that came out last year, so it doesn't count for this year, like even take into account, you know, for foreign releases. It's a South Korean movie. Let me see the description. A stranger.
Shocker.
Anyway. No, it came out last year here in the States at that point.
So, yeah. It's a shocker that it was a horror movie from South Korea.
Oh, I know, right?
That you watched. That was a shocker.
And it involves cops, too. So.
Oh, of course it does.
Yeah, so it's like every other movie.
Yeah.
A stranger arrives in a little village.
Does he defuse bombs also?
And nope. And soon after, a mysterious sickness starts spreading. A policeman is drawn, into the incident and is forced to solve the mystery in order to save his daughter. Who is very hell? That daughter is a hell of an actor. I'm just gonna say right now. Written and directed by Hong Jin Na, or Na Hong Jin.
Oh,
I forget what order they actually say the names.
Sure.
Yeah, you know that guy, right?
Right.
You know shit. it's funny because it has this little bit of a foreign trespassing thing to it because this Japanese man comes into their town and many of the problems that are thought to be the origin point is because of the Japanese intruder, and. And I think that goes far into a lot of the history of those countries and a lot of the animosity they might have. And a lot of that, you know, I'm not saying it's politically whatever.
Japan and Korea don't like each other?
I don't know. I'm sure they like each other now. They're cool as hell.
Pretty sure not.
What do you think? J-pop and K-pop are fighting out every day or something? Yeah, they are.
Probably.
They should.
Yeah.
Breakdance fighting. I want to see it now. Okay. Anyway, The Wailing is a very serious horror movie with some funny exploits because the main actor, I'm not going to butcher names right now, but the main actor is clearly a kind of half comedic relief and he turns serious throughout the movie.
Oh, okay.
He does have a daughter, but he's kind of a responsible policeman.
Is it a good transition?
It is a good transition. You realize, like, he's serious and before you realize that it's happening, you're believing him. Like, it's kind of natural,
good.
I guess.
Okay.
And also, it's serious because it's fucked up. A lot of blood in this movie is a horror. It's a legit horror movie.
Yeah.
The Wailing involves some sort of like a ghost or possession type of entity that possesses one person in a certain home or in a home area, like a house, I guess, and kills everybody in it. And the guy comes out like looking dazed and zombie-like, and they bite people, and the biting spreads into their homes, and they kill people. Like they're going to crime scenes, and no one understands where it's coming from. They try to depossess it with rituals and shit. But over there, I guess their culture—I'm not saying their culture only, but it is set in present time, and I think they're much more comfortable with the fact they don't have to talk their way around. Like, oh my god, we can't look for a scientific answer; we have to go with the mystical answer. For them, they jump right to the mystical answer or try to solve it that way.
Right.
So I like that how it just jumps to it, and you don't have to explain any shenanigans.
Right, right.
So I love that about it. It is a long movie though, it's over 2 hours, maybe 220, I forget. And but if you have the time to sit through it, it is Netflix does not have a dubbed version, so for you fuckers out there, you have to read the subtitles. Sorry, I'm not sorry, I love it, but yeah, I highly suggest it if you're into like a nice creepy, not a slow burn too. It has explosions of fucking horror, but it does take a long time for some of it to happen, but it's well worth it. Anyway, The Wailing, good ending, another good ending.
Cool.
So that's what we've been watching. We spent like an hour on that. Let us go into our first review of the evening. This is my movie day, isn't it? All these are my movies, aren't they?
It's all you. You better have IMDb up.
No, I wrote the descriptions off of these. I don't have to.
Oh.
Fucking... Well, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Better know how to read your own handwriting.
Oh, fuck. I wrote this on the bus.
You ever had that problem?
No. I mean, I don't write like a doctor, but I'm not like a 16-year-old either.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, listen, I know a lot of people that don't write after 16, and then they have that same handwriting.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people I realize don't write anymore.
Well, what's funny is that, to go off tangent, but what's funny is that every time I write anything, everyone goes, "You have such like legible writing."
Yeah, they
what'd
say that about me too.
What did you expect from me? Like, that I didn't know how to write?
Yeah. I also have this thing where all my short stories and screenplays that I write or whatever, I write them first longhand, and then I, you know.
Well, that's how I do all my edits anyway, or my drafts.
Oh, like when you write for papers and essays and shit?
Yeah. I'll do it. I'll do a draft first and paper. And then, because the...
Wait, Mexicans are educated?
I know.
Sorry.
Well, I do it first because I can't erase it on a paper. So, yeah. Or that's the way I see it anyway. I'll draw a line through it, but I rather keep it that way because then when I type it up, I'll just delete shit. And then what did I have written? Hmm. So, like, it's better that way. So
I hear you. Anyway, let's movies. We're gonna review. Fucking Christ! We're gonna do our first review of the evening from France, 2007's Persepolis.
Periodo di bruttezza eternamente rinnovata. Per cominciare, crebbi di 18 centimetri. Poi cambiò la mia testa. Il viso mi si allungò. Poi l'occhio destro diventò più grande, talonato dal vento. La mano destra mi diventò abnorme. Poi il piede sinistro. Il naso triplicò di volume. Il petto mi si sviluppò. Comparvero le chiappe, riequilibrando il mio centro di gravità. E per finire, un neo gigantesco decorò il mio naso.
What a great clip.
I picked, like, it was three clips off. You didn't listen to it. No, it was just
shit.
One. That's a lot of time. I'm not going to do that. The story is about a precocious and outspoken Iranian girl named Marjan Stratapi. Fucked that up, probably. Who grew up through the tumultuous times of the Islamic Revolution in the 1970s. Then, moving to Vienna after the new regime takes hold, Marjan reflects with the loneliness of living abroad versus the dictatorship in Iran. This is obviously an animated foreign picture. Not from Japan. We stayed away from Japan. We're going to stay away from Japan for a little bit because we know we love that place. And Raf and I and Luke, we've all grown up with those movies. And we'll have more, for sure. But for this one and the next one, I try to pick, you know, let's go with different countries. So this is France, but also Iran or Middle East. Kind of covers two huge swaths right there.
Sure.
And also, it makes this movie special or more different in a way that most people wouldn't expect. It is a biography. It's a biopic. Autobiography, actually, because the writer of the book wrote and animated this movie as well. Ah. She studied drawing and all that, I think. I don't know the whole history, per se. I only know what the movie showed me and a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff that I was able to read up on. So, yeah, this is a biopic, and it's set in a animated setting. So my first question to you, Raf, and I assume this is your first time
watching. Yeah, it is. It is my first time.
Okay. What did you think of using that medium to portray someone's life? Like, obviously, I'm not going to say what you think, why she did it, because that's a personal question. You don't know. But do you think it worked for you? Do you think it's a good way to do it?
I honestly feel by using, by going that route, you get away with showing a lot of things. In the animated route, you get away with showing a lot of things that, I guess you wouldn't feel comfortable showing in a live action movie, with, like, you know, the murder, not the murders, but the destruction and all that stuff.
Yep.
And then there's also the fact that I think you see more comedic value, especially towards the beginning, and just in general, whenever a comedic moment happens in an animated movie, than you would in a real life one. Because sometimes it's, you know, all
it's hard to separate
the actor and everything.
The hard reality with the comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I think in an animated thing, it's funny, you get to see it because you see, like, you get to make all those expressions and make them really, like, flaunt them really or use them really well in an animated thing, because you make them however the fuck you want them to make. In comparison to, you're trying to get that from an actor, and it might come out great, it might not. Mm-hmm. Overall, I found that it's an interesting medium, and I think it worked out. Also for the fact that it kind of helps her, or the fact that she's Iranian, and just about everything here is black and white. So kind of doing that, besides, like, the obvious soldiers that have the beards. And just the outfit in general that makes them stick out, that you're like, oh, yeah, that's Middle East.
For sure.
Doing that whole thing just makes them feel like that could be me or you.
True. I obviously picked this film. I've known about it. I saw it in 2007. Couldn't remember much of it. I remember a few scenes. I remember mainly the scenes that I remembered from 2007 were the scenes that made me love this character, Marjan, because, like, her love for I like when she, one of my favorite scenes is when she's going on the street, and this is already, like, ruled by what's that dictator that we all hated? Saddam Hussein. He's already taken hold. It fucking sucks. And she has to go to panhandlers to pick music that she would buy. And there's like different. Michael Jackson? No. Iron Maiden? Yes. Yeah. Like, she picks the one that she wants.
Yeah.
And she's haggling with the guy.
No, she doesn't even haggle. She wins that haggle.
She wins the haggle.
Well, what's funny is that before that scene before that.
You know the price before.
Right. She knew the price before. Yeah. She asked her mom, I need to borrow 50, whatever the currency was. And she said, what do you need 50? She's like, just need to buy my shit. Like, let me 50 stuff. All right, cool. And then there's like 100. 50, 70, 80, 50, 70, 50, 60, 50, 60, 50, 50. And I was just like, it's great, yeah.
Now, if he had Michael Jackson, he probably could, you know, raise his prizes, but it's Iron Maiden.
It's Iron Maiden.
I mean, I love Iron Maiden, but not everyone lives for it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It ain't for everyone. I love that scene. It just made me love this little girl and made me love the woman that she becomes throughout the movie.
Well, she's wearing a shirt that says, Punk is not dead.
Right.
And dead, D-E-D.
Right, right.
Yeah. Jackets, ready.
Right. It's funny how she flaunts her rebelliousness so capriciously, just like out there and in a regime that she could really get in an age today, you know, seeing this today in context with something fresher, which is The Handmaid's Tale, for example. If you do that shit, you fucking get killed and arrested and circumcised and God knows what in that show. Obviously, they're adults more, and this is a growing girl, so it's different, but also not different.
Sure.
So I think I love that. Also, we gotta say that this is also the month for reminiscing movies. This in Wonder Woman has this reminiscing thing. Because really, the older Marjan, the current Marjan in the film, she's at the airport. And she's reminiscing on her life in Iran, going to Vienna, and then coming back to... Eventually. Sorry, that's spoiler. I shouldn't have said that. But spoiler for real life, I don't know. Anyway, her time to get there, because that's in color. Yeah. And sometimes we'll cut back to that color time.
Yeah, the movie does start off in color. Yeah. I think there is three times. I already forgot. But the movie does start in color and it ends in color. But everything in between is in black and white because you're reminiscing about things.
And also, it's safe to say that you're watching it in a real movie or the real story of someone. Obviously, it's not shot on film, of someone that clearly makes it out. It's not like you have a question that she's going to die. You question more, if there is a death hanging in the air, it is about the war, about the people around her, about her possible friends, and about her family especially, because I was worried about them too. So I want to say that that's really what's hanging. But the movie is not about just that. It's about her, what she's seeing in the world as she grows up. Like, you can tell, like, the way she describes herself when she's hitting puberty. And it's, A, very funny, because she's describing her nose gets huge and her tits get huge and they drop her to the floor and then her butt balances it out. And she's, you know, is exaggerated ways that to her must have seemed like a huge monster. But to everyone else, it's just puberty, right? It's just growing up.
Right, and that's where the animation does a great job.
Right, right. To show and portray what she was feeling, even though she didn't understand, especially as a girl, a little girl. Oh, man, she had the best comebacks ever. As a little girl that loved her uncle that got killed in the fucking in prison, right? Or was sent to prison to death. I mean, till death, I mean. And that's not a spoiler. That happened in the first half or something. And it's harrowing, but also you can understand why a little girl like that wouldn't have the real complications of this human life, you know, a turmoil going around her in her mind.
Yeah.
So the movie reflects that. Did you like all that stuff, like the way it's approached?
Well, what I really liked, and it's in one of those parental things, I suppose, since you didn't really, you touched on it, but I'll get to the beat of it, is kids imitate their parents, and especially their environment. So their heroes, her hero happens to be her uncle. Her uncle is a very outspoken person against the government. And just because, like, hey, we have rights as well, and it's everything against whatever they're used to. And her parents are the same way. They believe in, you know, basically a lot of westernization stuff, right? But at the same time, they still love where they are, you know, and everything about that.
Right. They're the type that want to fix their country and not leave it.
Exactly.
Right.
And she immediately catches all the highlights and then convinces her friends to do the same thing, right? And then, but at the same time, like, you have to be careful what you say around your kid, because, like, even saying, like, oh, I would hurt that guy because that guy's a traitor or whatever.
Yeah, there was that scene where they almost beat up that kid
because his dad is one of the military guys, for example, right? And it's a shitty thing, right? And they want to hurt him, Right. And then you have to explain to her that, hey, like, what would happen if you, if they did that to you? Because we were that person and stuff. You can't do that.
Or you can't blame the kid for the
sins exactly,
of the father.
Sins of the father. Yeah. Right. And that's a very important thing.
Like, that's someone that she, that's something that she has to learn at that age. Not someone, not that something comes naturally through adulthood, because she's living it now.
She's living it now. Right. Exactly. And it's, it's a smart thing, because, like, it's a very cause and effect situation that, could have led in a lot, you know, a lot worse than it did. But it's an interesting that it's a very cautionary tale where, like, hey, your kid is listening to everything you're saying. Like,
yep.
And then your kid is enacting the things that you say, because if you say something's right like that, they're going to enact that way. Like,
complain about the government. Exactly. Then she's going to complain in school.
Right. They're just, they look up to you, you know? So it's a very interesting thing. Overall, like, yeah, it's a really good movie, though.
Yeah. So we both recommend it highly?
Yeah, yeah. We can get into spoilers if you want.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into it now. Yay, spoilers. Okay. From a, actually 10 years old now, this movie.
Yes, it is.
So I want to talk about the grandmother. I'm not just talking about spoilers now, in case you're still listening, that she, just because she dies at the end. It's not like quite like that. Right. It's more like I love the amount, her dedication to always, A, be there for her, in every sense of that word, by the way, and also, like, inspire and share wisdom whenever she can. And she has to do it multiple times at times.
She does this.
Probably her best scene is probably when she's the most mad at Marjan.
Yeah.
Right? That right. scene when she's... is this after she gets back from Vienna, right?
It is. It is when she gets back from Vienna. It's right before she gets married.
That's right. Oh, my God. That's right. No. It was after the marriage. No, it was during the marriage, because she was talking about...
Before.
Was it before? What was the context?
She's trying to meet the boy for a date, and she got all pretty dolled up, and then she blames the guy that hit on her or whatever, that was giving her like the weird look, because the government guys or whatever.
Right.
But she goes home.
Yeah,
she can't
leave without a burqa.
No, she just can't look dolled up.
She can't look dolled up, but she has to keep everything.
But
hidden.
Everything's hidden already. It's just that she can't look like she's dolled up, and she can't look like she's meeting somebody.
Right, and young adults are having like secret partings and booze. There's no booze.
Sure. Well, there's no
magazines.
Like, you can't even be seen with a man unless if you're married to that person or they're your relatives.
Essentially, you know? That's what she gets married for.
That's basically right. And that's the scene that happens right before that. She goes home and she's like, yeah, I totally threw this guy under the bus. And that's when she's like, I'm sorely disappointed
in you. That's right,
And then she gets married a little bit after that.
That's right. What do you think, now, obviously, I assume these things happen. It's biographical.
Sure.
But, or autobiographical. What is, do you think she did it for pity? Like her grandmother did such a good job that she married the guy that she threw under the bus?
What do you mean?
Like, why would she marry? Or is it just because, like, the idea that she doesn't know what it feels like to be in a room alone with a man that she's allowed to be with? Like, or like, do you think the culture around her made her think that their choice was to marry the guy? Like, had they been living together in Vienna, they would have just gone out, right? And then probably realized it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then not married, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you think that, you know what I'm saying? You think they only would have gotten married in Iran during those times?
Do I think they would have...
Oh, do you think they would have got married no matter what and then failed anyway?
No, I think it would have only been marriage because of the times.
Okay.
Honestly, I think she did it because she's like, yeah, like, we click. Everything works. You know, he's obviously not cheating on me, like, in comparison.
It's so hard to even...
Right, exactly, in comparison to whatever, like, you know, it's on lockdown. for example, yeah. in comparison to her previous relationships. So yeah, I think it was more of the fact that like, hey, I love spending all this time with you, the 3 hours a day I spend time with you. And then it becomes the fact that they get married. And
I
like,
think she said 3 hours a week. It's so hard to.
Oh, it was 3 hours a week. Yeah, so yeah. really small. Exactly, 3 hours a week, and like, which is crazy.
But also, there's a sense of danger with that because they're not supposed to. That probably adds to the spice of it. And now that's all gone.
Right, it is. Yeah.
And you have to realize, oh no, he has underwear to laundry. You know, to do laundry for or whatever. You know, some bullshit. You know, life happens.
He spends most of his days just watching TV.
Right, watching TV. So classic.
Because they're still really young and they're in school, so.
Right. No. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. Very, very, very much like a lot of marriages, probably, in ever, like today, yesterday, whatever.
Right. Well, and it's just the fact that, like, she had left, right, and she experienced the dating world and how it is normal in every other country, right? Or not every other country, but in most countries. Just a date, you know, you need to get to know the person first before you want to marry anybody. But when she goes back to Iran, and she's like, yeah, three of your friends are married, one already got divorced. One her like
because she had a small dick,
and she's not even 21. Like
right, yeah.
And so for them, it's like, yeah, we get married because hey, like we can't have a relationship unless if it's a marriage.
They probably can't even work. They need someone to support them,
right? And it's a mixed bag of things, you know.
Yeah,
and then so yeah, right. So there's a lot of things like that nature. So she just sees it as everything's. I'm back home. This is what normal is back home. Why wouldn't I get married? You know. There's no, like, it makes sense.
Now, let's talk about our time in Vienna, too, because I definitely don't want to skip that. Because I think
Well, she spent time in Vienna, and then she spent time somewhere else before that, though.
She goes to Germany at some point, I think, if I'm mistaken. Or lives with a German. Sorry, that's not the same thing.
No. She spent some, I thought she didn't go to Vienna at first. She went somewhere else first.
She gets sent to Vienna, yeah.
Did she get sent to Vienna?
Yeah, she goes somewhere after when she goes back to Europe. Oh, yeah, okay. Somewhere else,
never
I think.
Mind, never mind.
But Vienna the first time, yeah. I'm pretty sure about that. I was in the description, and I'm pretty sure I remember that. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Whatever. She goes to Istanbul. Doesn't matter. So she goes there, and obviously her time there and completely parallel, huge differences, right? Not parallel, opposite of that. And I love her. Her first time with a man is with him finding out that he is into men and not into women.
That was beautiful.
And also very apropos to the 70s.
Right. Yeah, what was so interesting, what I really liked about that is that she didn't get super butthurt, right, about mm-hmm. it. She was kind of confused because her first time.
Right.
His first time and everything at the same time, but he was very nice about everything.
Like you could tell, you could read her mind in that moment almost. Like,
right.
Oh my God, did my vagina make him gay or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
it's one of those. Stupid like but at the same time, yeah. He's like apologizing to her.
Yeah, he's
But thanking her at the same time.
Yeah, super nice about
super
it.
Super nice about it, right, exactly. So it was really
not
like,
a bad first time.
Not a bad first
for
time.
For a lot of people.
Right, yeah, yeah. Like there's worse. There could be worse where they're like, yeah. Thanks, Toots, like leave you.
Right.
Right, exactly. Like, well, I never see you again because sex was bad.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Who talks that way? And I love her first quote-unquote serious boyfriend, which is that pretty boy. I forgot his name already. It doesn't matter. I love how the result of that is what got her nearest to death, and she survived Shah's downfall and the rise of fucking Saddam Hussein and then traveling alone to a foreign country. Like... and she said it in those words almost. I think she just, you know, more pithy. She just said,
took
a broken heart that almost killed me, right?
Kill me, right?
That stupid man got me almost killed, right?
Exactly.
Because she was living alone and she was...
Well, that ended
she
up...
She was home hopping too, right?
Well, no. She had been stable by then,
yeah,
actually.
She had been stable.
She was home hopping, which was... What a dick move by the friend of the family.
Right?
Yeah. Dick move, oh yeah, like oh, we don't actually have space for you. She stayed there for like a month,
and she stayed at a convent or something.
Right, it was a nun's convent thing, right?
Yeah.
And so then it was kind of dickish.
And yeah, so she bed hopped everywhere, not like sluts, but just sleeping. And she ended up with the German with the dog. Oh my God, that annoying dog was humping her, and shit. Mm-hmm. It was really funny though. And they got into a fight right after the breakup. And because she's pissed off, whatever, it's her first real breakout, I guess. She ends up living alone, sleeping alone out there in the streets and shit. And it killed, pneumonia almost kills her.
Bronchitis.
Bronchitis, my bad. Like family, like cousins.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's both very funny in the terms of like a life like how life works, especially for someone that's coming from her. Like, she's been through a lot, and obviously she hasn't been through the worst of the lot of her own country, but she has. And it's funny how she can easily miss the trees for the forest, so to speak, and the context of what she's been through and what she should be caring about, and definitely, like, leave this douchebag guy alone.
Well, what's
get rid of him in
what's
your
interesting
head.
She does is that she actually even goes all in about learning, you know, trying to learn their culture.
She has those friends, too, those punk friends.
Yeah, those punk friends, those punk rich friends that all complain, I have to go to Brazil to visit my dad.
The hell? I wish I could go to Brazil.
Like, I have to go to Paris to go see my dad.
Christmas is a big thing.
Christmas was a big thing for them, yeah. And she's like, whatever. And they're like, I want to go back to visit my parents. Like,
yeah.
Right. Wow. And they're talking about, like, oh, like socialism, like, you know, shit like that. But no, it's what's cool is that she even she doubled down on her life where she's like, let me not be me anymore. Let me live the way they live. Right. And it's interesting because it's something when she leaves, she's like, live how you want, how you are. Don't forget who you are. Something that her grandma and her mom tells her. Is be who you are. Don't forget who you are, where you come from, right? And then that basically by going over there and then kind of like, oh, well, I'm going to double down on this, like how they live. She kind of ends up forgetting who she is just because she's like, well, everybody else is successful in how they are doing it here. Why shouldn't I?
Well, I should act like I don't care and
exactly.
Go to Brazil and then. Okay, so her return back, I think, is very great. Now, I don't want to just not say the marriage, but I think that this one I realized, the second viewing anyway, that the smallest characters that come into her life, I think, are giving a surprising, like a very good amount, or not a good amount, but a very nice, delicate touch to their very, like, two scenes that they come in. I'm talking about the guy who makes the passports, and I'm talking about his, the girl he had hiding there. And we don't see it. But we know that he is on the run at some point, and they capture and kill her. And I think they show some of the visualization. I think it's either her imagining it or it's happening, of her being hanged, right, or shot to death. I forget what it was.
Yeah, something like that.
And they show a lot of those, actually. But we met that girl once, briefly, for like two lines, and I fell for that. I fell for the pain of that because of all the amounting shit that's been going on around her family and around her. Like when she left, life was not getting better there.
No, it clearly wasn't.
And, you know, she missed him dearly. Homesickness, almost her second death coming, right? Almost like because they're still ruling her, and she was willing to put up with that for a long time until she realized that she didn't have to. It's great that she had French, she knew French the whole time.
Right, the whole time she was in French school, right, I think?
Her mother said that.
Yeah, or like the private school was French or something like that. So she got to go French and just got lucky, really.
Yeah, a lot of luck there.
Learning another language.
And when the movie got to the end, to the goodbyes, I don't know, I was kind of devastated. Especially that first time when I saw it.
Well, what's interesting is that her parents are very, they're big figures in her life, of course, right?
Yeah.
She's an only child. Right? Am I correct?
Yes.
And then her... they're just so involved in helping other people that she kind of gets, and obviously, like, making sure their kid is fine, that a lot of the, if ends up becoming that a lot of the stuff that, a lot of the wisdom that needs to be inspired by comes from the grandmother. All the, like...
And also this need to, like, push out of the nest.
Right, it's
twice.
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
Well, once too early, another.
Sure, right,
late,
that's basically what it is, yeah. But it's kind of like the parents are just like very like, hey, like, you know, we're here to help you with whatever you need, right, and things of that nature. That's cool and all. We think we did our everything. But it's like her grandmother is almost like her best friend. And it works. And she kind of like she feels really comfortable talking to her about anything. It's very confident. Exactly. That's the word I would use. It's you get a lot of the stuff that it's like talking to a best friend who knows everything, like who's already, it's like having just an older friend, basically, because they've already been through that stuff, so they can tell you about it, you know, in comparison to, like, you know, you can't listen to your mom about that or your parents telling you about that, but a lot of times you're just like, whatever, you're just my parents, you know, like,
exactly.
So you don't really take it too much. But
when she's on her return to Iran, like, she's, at some points, there's this whole this whole thing when she's, like, just sitting in front of the TV, right, and kind of ignoring the world, and her mother's like, getting ready for a party or getting ready to do something, an activist thing or whatever, and she's trying to get her daughter to fucking get up and do something.
Yeah. What's really got me from this movie is that, like, the whole depression part. She gets diagnosed with depression. She's like, that's very easy. You have depression. And how it was portrayed was really cool because it's like you're numb to everything. And that's actually what I've heard from a lot of people.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Who's like, yeah, you're just numb to everything. So, like, because instead of being all down about everything, you're just like, it doesn't pick you up. It just makes you like, okay, I don't care about it anymore. Kind of like one of those things, which is kind of shitty. Like, it's not a good feeling at all, which is really interesting to me because you're just like, you're putting yourself in a different crappy mood. It's not as crappy as the mood you were in. It's just a different feeling. It's more like
you can't even justify with a bad mood because it's just constant.
Right, exactly. It was so weird. To watch her go through that and then finally her willpower, her mind power, everything to get out of it, which was really cool. And then she sings it in English also, the Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, that was great. Oh,
great scenes. Great scene.
Yeah, I think that's the clip I used. I don't know.
Great
future
montage.
Oscar Wolf.
Yeah. Great montage too. Like, dent.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It was really cool to see it, and she starts working out. She goes back to school,
which also shows the influence of the pop culture-ness of the times, because the world is still happening. United States and French. The movie is definitely Rocky's been out for a while,
right?
And it makes sense that she would know that stuff. She would know what Iron Maiden's sitting about, what Rocky's about, what you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Iran gets that shit too if they want.
Exactly. Yeah.
If they can get it smuggled in, it's like cigarettes being smuggled into a prison, you know.
It's
like,
right. It's really cool.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah. That's really cool. But yeah, like you said earlier, the when she does leave, that's that last goodbye scene. That's a real goodbye. That's a real like.
Right. They say in voiceover, she says that her grandma died recently after that, like, a few months later.
She says really recently. I think like a week later or something crazy shit like that. And it's a real goodbye scene because it's like. It's literally like you're out of the nest now, and we're burning the nest, so you don't know where it is anymore. Like one of those kind of things.
Because she can't come back.
Exactly. Because she even tells...
It still takes a while for Iran to come back, and even then there's another war.
Right, yeah. Even the mother tells her, like, I forbid you to come back.
Yeah.
You're forbidden to come back. Yeah, that's a very powerful scene.
Very.
And it's funny because, like, he's like, of course dad cried. Just whatever, because dad cries about everything. Right? It was a really funny scene. A big topic in the movie that we haven't even mentioned because we're fucking men. Women are the stronger people in this.
Yeah, very Steel Magnolias.
Very Steel Magnolias. But it's just the fact that they go through all this shit, right? And they're the ones who have to be forced to do everything, right? And even there's a big complaint, which is kind of what leads to her leaving the second time, about, the women need to, you know, wear longer skirts and wear this, this, and that because you're being too provocative.
And talk about that other mother, that other grandmother age grandmother person, that old lady who's like so afraid to do anything. Like even in the house, she has to wear she's afraid to take it out in the house. And even at one point, like I think this might be like one of the nuggets that got the Marjan's mother to kick her out of the nest, so to speak, is that when she's in the house with it on, and then she has to be reminded to take it out because she forgot she had it on. That's how often. She is becoming, even though she's a passive revolutionary activist dude, like she forgot and she has to take it off and like, she's frustrated that she had it on all the time.
Exactly. That's a very interesting, and even, that's an interesting thing. But when she stands up for herself is that, and she's like, well, listen, I do art. Like, I study, I like art. That's my class I take, right? And I need to be able to move. I can't wear stiff shit. Like, and the fact that you're making me, like, hold this thing, like, this is a tighter thing, this is this. Like, we need to be able to more movement and this and that. And she's like, and you're calling me provocative. What about the guys? Why don't they stop looking at us? Why do they have to get aroused by everything? Maybe they shouldn't get aroused by everything so easily, right? And it's like calling it back at them. It's a very powerful thing. It's just like women have little to no power, but at the same time, they clearly have a lot more power than we think they do, because they do take care of everything else, you know, or just more like everything.
Kind of like everything.
Yeah. And we say that they have no power, and that's a big thing that's going on in the Middle East. But that's why they're like, oh, the Western, you guys think in the Western way. They're like, we do, because it makes sense that people should, like, there's equality between men and women.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a powerful scene. How do you think, how did the movie feel, make you feel when she's at the airport, it goes back to color, the movie's about to end like seconds away, it ends, and she's...
Well, a lesson learned, right?
Lesson learned for sure. But also she's not feeling great. Not yet, anyway. Now, we're lucky because we know that she's going to make the movie we're watching.
Sure.
She's clearly going to be some sort of successful filmmaker or a cartoonist.
Artist, yeah,
cartoonist, anything.
Yeah.
And she succeeds. At the very least, she writes the book that it's based on and all that. So I do feel like it's a happy ending when you realize this is all, you know, based on reality and all that. So, but did it make you feel anything else besides that? If it did, because I was just...
Well, I didn't know it was directed by or written by her.
Yeah, it wasn't directed by her. I don't think.
No, it wasn't,
maybe,
but it was written by her.
Might be wrong, but...
I didn't know that. That's a bigger plus for me, and I guess now.
Right, yeah.
I would definitely say...
Written by her, yeah.
Written by her, yeah.
Yeah.
So, how did I feel? I felt that this is a person who she is always going to know her roots from. And something, this is somebody who I can always... This is a question that I get asked, right? And I've always been asked. And I've never had to say that I'm... I don't tell people I'm American. I always tell people I'm Mexican.
Right.
Right, and that's something that even when I was growing up, I never said. Like, for me, American and Mexican is the same thing for me, because in the end, we're all Americans because we live in America, North America. Like,
right, we've always been technical, funny about it.
Sure, yeah. But at the same time, I feel I've always felt Mexican. My roots lie in Mexico and my traditions and all of my stuff
right,
like that.
Yeah.
So for me, I've always been Mexican, even though I was born in the United States. So for her to say, especially how it ends, because during her travel abroad when she was in Vienna, she's like, oh, I'm from Paris.
Cause, right. Because yeah.
She speaks great French.
Yeah.
And she's not from Paris. And then they make fun of her, those girls. They're like, she's not from Paris. Who she thinks she's kidding, right?
Yeah.
They make, like, fuck you guys.
Skin and all that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But it's pretty cool that she does get this mole on her face.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a very Paris thing, I thought.
Yeah.
But what's it called? Mainly because from the mimes. But,
Yeah, they fucked up a lot of images for us.
Yeah, they really did.
No times.
But at the same time, like, when she ends and she's like, oh, yeah, where are you coming from at the taxi?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm coming from Iran because, you know, she's like, I'm Iranian or whatever. And he's like, oh, and that's an answer she's always going to get from now on.
Yeah.
And that's how you feel the movie ends. And she's like, her answer is always going to be, no matter where she is, she's from Iran.
Yep.
She knows that everything she does, her struggles of her people, anything that happens for them, she knows she got out from that.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that she came from there, and everything from that, her history, her all that stuff, her culture lies there. Even though she doesn't have to wear the burqa or whatever the thing is called,
right?
Because she was kind of forced to wear that while she was there,
right? Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So yeah, it's a really cool ending for me. It's definitely more of a hopeful ending, more like I get to do whatever I want now, because I've been giving this opportunity again to go do what I want.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I agree, and we clearly love this movie. So are we clearly recommending it? I don't feel
no,
safe.
I give it 2 thumbs down. That turn upside all of down that. And go up.
See, you didn't like that one scene. That one scene killed it.
Right,
the
exactly.
whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Persepolis. It's one word, Persepolis. We recommend it highly. Check it out. It's not available to watch on any streaming platform that I could see without renting or buying it. But it is on iTunes, which is where I got it. Totally watch it. I mean, if you heard this far, you haven't seen it, you've kind of been spoiling everything. But how can you spoil a life? You have to watch it and experience it yourself. Just watch The Eye of the Tiger on YouTube, actually. Just, you know, I think it'll get you going. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back after this clip, we're going to start reviewing another French film. Totally by accident, by the way. An indie horror film called Raw, R-A-W. So stay with us for that.
Merde. Quoi? Attends, quoi?
Je comprends pas.
Attends, mais ça part pas?
Je sais pas.
Mais attends, y a pas de plan B?
Je comprends pas, là. Attends.
Non, non, tu vas m'exciser, là. T'es ouf?
T'as pas le choix.
Mais tu trembles. En fait, ma chatte!
Justine is a vegetarian young girl starting vet school. That's
veteran school.
Veterinarian, not veteran.
Yeah.
After undergoing a carnivorous hazing ritual, Justine develops an unbidden taste for meat with violent results. That's really the simple plot of this movie. Raw, available now at your local theater. Not really. It really came out last year, but coming out this year here in the States. Hmm. Foreign film, French. It's available on iTunes and whatnot to rent. Not streaming yet, but Netflix might pick it up soon because they're picking up everything. So, Rob, I don't know any of the actors, although the roommate guy looks familiar as hell for me. But you know something we never mentioned that I feel really shitty about when we do reviews, right? We never mention who writes and directs this stuff. I'm going to mention it now. I'm going to try.
Fun.
Written and directed by, a lady, Julia Ducournau. I'm just going to go with Ducournau. She wrote and directed this whole fucking thing, starring Garance Marillier. Fuck that up. Ella Rumpf. Fuck that up again. Laurent Lucas. Rabah Naït Ofela. Joanna Preece. Bully Lenners. I'm going to stop there. But really, the first three names that you remember hearing from me are the ones to think about. And this is not a pure horror film. This and their last review of the night are actually kind of both slow burns, and they're also more into the environment. They're all about the setting. They're all about the tension. They're all about, like, the possibility of getting there. And then when it gets there, it's not exactly like explosions and shit or buckets of blood, but it is still a horror movie. You can't deny it. Don't show this to your kid. Don't have your kid in the background watching it. I should have warned you, Ralph. I don't know if Leo was around you.
He was sleeping.
Good. All right, so I know I gave it to you last time, so I'll give it to myself this time. Sorry, I have to stand up. My butt hurts. Raw. I believed that... I am a big horror fan, by the way. I'm a huge horror fan. I've seen everything. And from The Common to The Uncommon, from Cannibal Holocaust to Wizard of Gore, from whatever. It doesn't matter. I've seen it all. Most. I skip a lot, by the way. The Rite. Skip that one. The Exorcism of Emily Rose Part 2. Skip that one, too. So... very little scares me, Ralph. The Shining scared the shit out of me because I was like 12 years old when I saw it.
Sure.
But very few since then. This movie freaked the fuck me out. It freaked me out completely.
Really?
Yes.
I'm hungry.
No, the hunger thing was there. This movie did not put me off my chicken that I had before.
Hey, I was eating chicken too.
I was eating chicken at the time. I ate it before.
So my wife was eating chicken.
During?
Beginning of the movie. She stopped because she just stopped being hungry. And then at the end of the movie, I was getting hungry. And I was like, I'm just going to eat some chicken. So I started eating her chicken.
All these paralyzed.
And I was like, you want some? And she's like, no, thank you. How are you hungry right now? And I was just like, I don't know. I just got hungry. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I can divorce those thoughts. Like, it doesn't make me puke.
Yeah.
But it made me squirm. This movie, and very few movies, horror movies, have ever done that. Very few times. And some movies, like, are not horror, or sometimes with, what's the guy who did Drive?
Yes.
Nicholas Winding Refn. Sometimes his movies will do something like, oh, whoa, like sudden impact of horror. It's insane. And a head split open and shit. Like, okay, that came out of nowhere. And that freaked me out a little bit. Or not freaked me, but startled me or made me wince or something. That can happen. But this movie did it for minutes long at a time. And there were times where I'm eating. We're not spoiling too much. But there's a point where she's eating an appendix. Appendage?
Appendage.
I'm an idiot. Not appendix. What am I saying? She's eating a book. Appendix. An appendage of something. She's eating the first time she's eating that raw thing from the fridge, right? Anyway, even the very first time, the hazing ritual itself was very horrific and also very, not original, but very human. We should describe more about this movie. I was trying to say my first impression that I love this movie, really dug it, probably will not watch it again, maybe to show it to somebody else, because I think I got what I needed out of it. But Raw is a really fascinating trip. Now, before I keep spoiling shit, Raf, what did you think of the movie?
I would agree with you. It's a fascinating movie to watch. I felt like the movie focused a lot more on like. I'm trying to think. And that's not a bad thing. It didn't do a bad thing. I'm just saying. But the movie felt like the school is just a tool for her to be there. And there's for everything else that happens. Like, it almost feels like she wasn't at school at all from the experience she's going to. And like I said, it's not a bad thing because what they're trying to just portray is that's how unimportant it was after a certain thing. Because they make a big deal about how she's going to school for this thing.
And she's one of the straight A people, too.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so she's going through that. And so when she's, she gets to the school and then it's literally hazing And that's all it is after that. Just about. It's hazing and partying.
Like, it's like Rush Week. It, the whole movie takes place in a week in this brand new school. Right, she's a freshman. Right, she's being hazed the whole week.
I don't know. I get it. But what I'm trying to say is like the movie
I'm explaining the context for people who don't know.
Oh, yeah. So what I was saying, for me, it felt like the school was almost non-existent. But it's just the fact that we're paying attention to what's important to her, which makes sense for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Other than that, I did like it. I would agree with you 100% with, like, I don't need to rewatch this movie, but I totally would tell somebody, hey, you should watch this movie.
Let me sit there and see your reaction to it.
Right. Right. Tell me when you're like,
tell them nothing about it. What's the movie about? It's about wrestling.
It's
you know, Raw.
And it's interesting
Raw's
how
war.
It starts off.
Right.
It kind of like, if you don't pick up the context clues, it starts off with a car accident.
That's right. That's right.
There's a person who gets up, and then she just starts walking towards the car, or he. And then that's it. And then it starts off with her, main actress with her parents eating mashed potatoes.
Overbearing parents
or overbearing
mother anyway.
Overbearing mother.
Yeah.
And then they were eating mashed potatoes. They were eating
getting
vegetarian thing
of Mrs. Bates off her. That's how
for
overbearing
sure,
she
for
was.
For sure, yeah. And then she had a piece of meat in her mashed potatoes, and her mom goes to complain because they're vegetarians.
That's right. And hardcore.
Hardcore.
She hasn't eaten meat ever.
Ever.
That's not only the illusion, but I believe they said those words.
They say that.
Like she's never.
Exactly.
And that she has an older sister at vet school as well. Apparently, this is like a family career thing. Like, if your dad's a lawyer, you're going to be a lawyer, kind of those things. Like, if your mom's a veterinarian, you're going to be one too.
Yeah.
At least she knows the ins and outs.
Or her parents are.
And this is like the Harvard of vet school. It looks like it too. It looks legit.
Right.
By the very roughness of it all.
Well, that's the thing. That's what made me feel like this place is supposed to be legit. Like, the best of the best go here. And it's just like are there teachers in this place? Because it feels like there's no discipline or anything.
Well, that's how Ralph and I, you know, you and I haven't had that college experience. We never went to university. That's Danny. He's a college boy.
Sure.
And he hasn't been on it for a long time either. We did the community, and then we did technical type stuff, and I did the film school, but it was a two-year thing, and I did it from home. I didn't go and live anywhere, you know, and I was like in my late 20s and shit when I did it. So we don't have that experience. We don't have the dear white people / you know, whatever.
Understood. Right.
That's a very weird reference to my name, but it's the first college movie I could think of. So we don't have that. So I don't know how it really is, but as far as I can tell, is that it feels very much like you're in the world of just the kids around you.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're talking about focus. I mean, we focus so much on this girl. There are barely other students sometimes. So much less
right.
teachers.
It does feel like yeah, it's just trying to.
So I don't blame the movies too much about that. The movie is short, by the way. It's nice and sweet and short. Not sweet, though. Very bitter. Blood tastes like iron in your blood and your tongue, by the way. And part of the hazing ritual on the first day is that she has to eat what they say, rabbit kidneys or something like that. The whole point is that the school is very, very in love with the fact that there are carcasses all around. Blood is a part of the life of style of the students being a vet. Because you got to know all this shit. You got to open up dogs. You got to go inside fucking cow asses.
Right.
Right. You have to know this shit.
The thing behind it is basically like, if you're afraid of getting hazed now, you're probably not making it, and you're probably
right,
not
because you can't
make
be squirmy.
Right, you can't be squirmy. The whole thing is like you're gonna get blood on you. Guess what?
And they throw buckets of blood on them.
They throw buckets of blood on them. Your jacket's never gonna look great.
Yeah. Did you think of Carrie when it did
that? Of course.
Like massive Carrie.
Of course.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Your jacket's never gonna look clean. The shit you might have to be, and that's an interesting thing you pick up is like, you might have to be dressed up, and you have to go fucking make a vet call or whatever, and you're going to get blood on that shit.
And it literally happens to her sister. Like, right. She gets interrupted, like, oh, can I go to do this? And she's pooping out and, you know, whatever, grabbing shit.
Right, exactly. Like,
yeah.
Be prepared to do shit that you don't want to be doing at times you don't want to be doing them too.
Right.
And that's kind of
like, you can see very clearly from the beginning that this girl, Justine, who's the main actress, of course, and she is very meek. She's very much like, you think, sheep or sheeple kind of thing. Without a doubt, that's what she's almost portrayed. She might as well have stamped on her forehead. You can imagine throughout the course of the movie, as a horror film usually does, she is not at all that by the end of it. And her sister, what's her sister's name? I forget her name.
Yes.
Alexia. Mm-hmm. Or Alex, they call her Alex. And she's a huge influence into what's happened. And I have a lot of questions about that because there's a lot of, like, origin. This is almost like the either the start of a superhero or the start of a supervillain. right? More likely supervillain. And you have a lot of questions about the origin story because it's very, very subtle. This movie does not really openly tell you things because it's all her experience. And this movie could be a metaphor for something. Either it is very straightforward, like this weird genealogical problem in the family bloodline, yeah. Or is it just like a big, gigantic metaphor, bloody, horrible, man-eating metaphor for growing up, hunger pains, growing pains, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, could it be about that as well? It could be about both, because she is growing up into her own woman. She's still clearly not there yet, even though she's out of high school. Not that you have to be right out of high school to be a woman, but you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, you're
right. So she gets that first morsel, that rabbit kidneys forced into her mouth. That's a very interesting scene because I felt like her sister was a piece of shit when she forced her to eat it. And but in context, without spoiling, now that you know what you know, do you think she did it knowing that she would trigger this thing in her?
No. The way I felt it, and I still feel the same way, where is that her sister forces it to be like, listen, if you want to be anything in this school, because you stick out like a fucking sore fucking thumb, right? Because you're a fucking prude. You look like a prude. You're just going to be this preppy fucking person who knows everything. Nobody wants you to be that.
Right.
You want to fit in even at the least amount. This is the best help I can give you is fucking take that fucking kidney, rabbit kidney.
And swallow it.
Swallow it. Yeah. Just fucking go do your job. Go do that. You need to. Right. Just because you need to fit in. Like, that's what you need to do, fit in. I hate to tell you, you don't want to be the guy who doesn't get fit in.
Right.
That's the whole point of that. And that's how I felt it, and that's how I still feel.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
We'll answer that more later. So what did you think of her slow, because it's a slow burn movie too, what did you think of her slow burn transformation? She eats this piece of meat. It opens something in her. Now, what were you thinking throughout her transformation? And could there have been a more... I don't say direct because I guess the movie's pretty direct. But is there a different approach that you thought was going to happen or would have wanted to happen?
Yeah, I thought that was because the hint, she gets food poisoning from it.
True.
And she gets a humongous allergic reaction to it where she gets rash all over her body.
She's a very wise doctor.
Rash all over her body minus the face. But she's scratching hardcore on it and I've been there before.
Oh my God, the scratching sounds and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, took you back, huh?
Took me back.
Today.
To what?
To today, yeah.
It's a very... So I thought it was going to be cool, the route of, like, her becoming, like, that, like, even worse than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, her being forced to do it even more. And the doctor even told her, like, did anyone tell you had to take it? And she's like, well, besides her sister. And she's like, you weren't forced to take it, right? Nobody actually forced you, right? You need to let me know now. Because if that's the case, then, yeah, like, you shouldn't do it or something like that, right? Like, yeah. Don't be gullible. Like... She was basically telling her, you're still your own person. You can say no to things.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to change for anybody.
But peer pressure is a hell of a
peer pressure is a hell of a fucking thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
That's true.
Right. I feel like we can't get into further her transformation without spoiling things.
Right. I think we should just get into it now.
Yeah.
So, spoilers for Raw. We should say also, before we actually get into the real spoiler stuff, I will recommend this movie very highly, even though, like I said, I probably wouldn't see it again unless I'm showing it to someone. It is short, which is nice. All in French, don't bitch. The performances really sell the horror in the movie by the main girl, Justine, played by Garance Marillier, or Garance Marillier. I'm trying to pronounce it like it's some other language, but whatever. I'm sorry about
sure.
that. She looks the part, and she can look both parts. She looks the meek and the eventual wolf
for sure, yeah.
that you know she's going to turn into after, like, 20 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
So that isn't a huge spoiler. She doesn't literally turn into a wolf, though. That's a spoiler, I guess, that she doesn't turn into a wolf. So, spoiler, sorry. But now we get into real spoilers. So, what are you going
to
say?
All right, quick precursor to this whole transformation thing is when her sister loses the finger. Okay.
Oh my God, that whole thing with the scraping of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Before that, even. It was like, oh, stop doing that. Stop scraping the her pubic hairs or whatever, or hers around her leg. Or
it wasn't scraping. It was waxing.
Waxing, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
She was like, pulling it off. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. So she's she gets the scissors and what all that jazz happens. You know how they said, like, oh, the dog did it? They blamed it on the dog?
Right, yeah, they did.
Right? And that's the dog. What do they say? We're going to have to put the dog down because
now it tastes
the
meat.
It had the taste of blood.
Blood, yeah.
It had the taste of blood or meat, whatever, of a human. And now it's going to want that. It might want that taste now again.
So obviously you think
big precursor. Gigantic precursor of that, of basically her transformation.
So you think that she would have been satisfied probably with just regular meat before that time?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that if she had ate meat just in general, would she have ever gone through this problem?
Right, would she just be buying raw beef all the time?
Steak or not just raw steak, but I think would she, if she got meat in the beginning, like when she was growing up, would she have just never cared, like meat to me, it doesn't matter. Like, and I was just,
well, that's the question also. Like, I mean, a hardcore 100% vegetarian suddenly being turned into meat, accidentally or otherwise, at the age of 20, 19, whatever she is, like, what can that do to a person?
Well, it's the iodine in the blood or whatever. Something something triggered it to where the flavor got to her. And it's the blood. And it doesn't happen. The big transformation doesn't happen until she tastes her
sister's finger. Yeah.
Which is the huge transformation there, because it was that specific type of meat with the blood on it and everything, not just like this kidney thing that she had, that she ended up throwing it up. It was this whole, like, it was this whole, that whole transformation. That whole, the fact that she had that raw, she wanted it. Like, she tasted it.
And she looked at it for a while, too. Definitely
right,
conflicted.
Right. Did she eat that raw meat beforehand already?
The one in the fridge and shit? Yeah, that happened already.
Okay.
She was there was another incident, too. I just forget what it was. But with not human meat, but something else. And then it turns into the finger, and then from there, the roommate. That also is the nexus point for a big reveal that I didn't know was a mystery even, because it just happens.
Right.
And that is the fact that the sister, which is why I asked earlier, do you think she did it on purpose, forcing her to haze it? You'd say no. I think your argument is solid that she should have taken it for her status as a vet school person. Yeah, that makes sense too. It probably could have been both, right? But the sister saw her eating the finger, which is awesome reveal because they're like, oh, fuck, like...
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, they're lying. Okay, she's covering for her sister. Strange cover-up.
Right.
Because I'm like, that doesn't seem strange. Well, if you eat my finger, I'm telling people.
Right, but I think the look they were giving each other was just like, please don't let me get into it, mom and dad. Right? It was things.
Yeah,
and it was just like, I'm going to fucking bitch the shit out of you later, and you better be grateful that I said it was the dog and not you.
And when they go by their ways after the hospital, she's like, fuck the hospital, fuck the wheelchair. Why put someone in a wheelchair after a finger? Whatever, it doesn't matter. Her legs work fine. They go to this highway thing, and then she surprises a car to hit a tree, just like in the opening scene of the movie, just with a different car. And
well, she gets hit.
Oh, she does get hit?
She does get hit, yeah.
I didn't catch that because it was the camera stayed on her.
She still gets hit. She just gets hit like the tail end or something, and she gets knocked down. And she's like, "Are you fucking crazy or whatever?"
I thought she just hurt herself trying to like jump to surprise them, but I guess she got hit.
Yeah, I think she jumps on the car and slides off or something like that. That's what it sounded like, because there still was a thud when she gets hit. Where and you're like, "What the fuck?" And she basically caused an accident on purpose to kill these people,
to eat them. Yeah,
right.
And not like zombie stuff. I mean, I don't think she can eat all that, but she was definitely licking the head, the wound of the guy's head.
She was eating the brain.
Yeah, eating the brain, probably. Yeah, I don't know if it was open. It wasn't that open.
It looked like a big gash.
But maybe open enough to crack it.
Sure.
That sounds gross.
But she was eating it, and she was like, I did this for you.
And the sister was like so aghast by it. Like, oh, clearly this is a family thing, or the sister also being raised as only vegetarian up to college, or university, whatever they call it. That she went through the same transformation as a human being learning about meat or something.
Yeah.
And she must have tasted human blood and gotten to this point. Like, she's killing people on the street, you know? It's funny because this plot point doesn't really go anywhere. But I love the reveal of the sister thing because it opens up a can of worms that kind of stays pretty much heavily until the very end.
Right.
Which is very interesting. We'll get to the ending. And I love how the reveal works for the sister, because you really think that she is like, man, when they, after the hospital, like, she's taking this very cool. And like, oh, okay, she's going to exact her own revenge. She's going to ask questions. Like, why were you eating my, like,
right.
She's going to do all the shit. And like, nope, did not go there. Went the opposite direction. I'm going to kill for you now.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this animosity that grew between these two? Because if anything, it should bring them together, you would think. And not because they're family, but also because like they were pretty much opposites from the beginning of the movie. Her older sister...
Outgoing.
Alex, outgoing, party girl. We meet her at a party.
Yeah.
She's like dancing crazy. And clearly smart too and all that. You know, I assume she's in third year. And you think that... this oppositeness, and then they find out they're both in on this thing at the same school together with this meat blood lust.
Yeah,
you think they would get along, and they don't.
Well, I think they don't get along because she cut her finger. She made her cut her finger off, right? Mm-hmm. Or she did it. And there's that one thing, right? So she's holding kind of a grudge against that still, I think. Not only that, but she also like, well, you obviously have the taste for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get to the point where I am, or you're at the point. And she's like, I did something for you. You had an opportunity, and you wasted it, right? You wasted the meat that was there for you to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, okay, if you don't want it, then fuck it. When you come to me later, like I'm going to give it to
but
you.
But it seemed like she was doing that with a purpose. You think it was more like a tough love situation? Like she'd come back for it? She'd come back to help, and I would help her then after some tough loving?
Well, yeah, it was
Or was it, I mean, I don't think that she was really giving up. At some point, I did think that, but I don't think that was one of them.
Okay, so I thought more like Alex was just telling her, like, listen, this is how I do it. This is how I'm getting it, right?
And I'm clearly passing my glasses. I'm not fucking around.
Right, exactly. This is how I'm doing it.
I'm not having some crazy shivers.
Right? Sure, right. Well, yeah, you can't wean off of it.
No, you can't.
So you can, like, this is how I do it. This is how, if you want to do it, this is how we're doing it. You want to fuck around and do it your way, go ahead. But this is how I do it. Take advantage of what you have here because you already have the taste for it. And that's what she was trying to get her at. Mm-hmm. And I think she was just drunk and high and whatever for that when later on what happens at that party.
Yeah, that party was a real breaking point also because describe the scene for you. At some point, Justine doubles down on her rebelliousness, not just to her sister, but not just to her own bloodlust and newfound hunger, but also a rebelliousness in a way to just like everything and all at once, which really causes some problems. It causes basically a scandal in the school where her sister films her in a drunken, crazy... She's just like straight up vodka, full cup of vodka, straight up. Yeah. Or bourbon, maybe. I don't know.
That was vodka.
Yeah. And she tapes her, like, what's this sister doing? Like,
someone's taping her. Is that her sister?
Oh, no. Her sister's taping it. Oh, her sister's doing the hand thing.
Someone's doing it. Yeah. She's taunting her sister, but right. Someone's just taping it.
So Alex is taunting Justine, the drunk-ass Justine, like, blackout drunk, with a dead body, right? In a morgue? I guess they study the dead people, too. I made sense. Humans, too, right? Yeah. They're animals, too. And they're taunting her to eat the hand. It looks completely gross, and everyone's like, don't film it, but everyone's still looking, not really stopping the guy.
She wants to get a bite of it.
And it becomes a thing, and she has this huge, they have this huge fight, probably the best cat fight recent memory.
Sure.
These two sisters fight, and they're biting each other in front of the whole fucking school.
Right, where you think her sister wins, Alex wins, by biting her in the cheek and ripping a piece of it off.
Oh, yeah, whole piece.
Completely. And I don't think she spits it out, I think she eats it.
Yeah, I didn't see it spit out.
But I didn't see it spit out either. But... it doesn't. It ends up with them biting each other's arms.
And then that calms them down. Like two lionesses.
Yeah.
Fucking around.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Rawr.
It's just like that. Yeah. Well, it's like two hippos fighting.
It was amazing.
Something crazy, yeah.
It was amazingly crazy. Like, amazing, not great, but just
like
amazing
National
to watch.
Geographic kind of shit.
Right.
Right.
It was very crazy and intense. Like that,
yeah. So, it was interesting. But you can tell that, like, it almost feel like her... our main character, what's her? Justine. She has, once she gets the taste of it, she has a lot more control than her sister does. Her sister's, I think, more bloodlust than her...
Alex, you're talking about.
Than Alex, yeah. Alex is more bloodlust than Justine is. Justine's just starting, so she just needs to get, like, in it, right? And I think and it felt that way because...
So this week is, like, her trial to learn it?
Right. I think she had multiple opportunities, for example, to get her roommate, for example... and she bit that one guy that she, you know, whatever.
Oh,
she
and
she was getting control.
By the way, that paint thing.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool way to show what, you know, like the problems with, like, hey, don't come out until you're green.
Yeah.
Or what was the color?
Right, yeah. Because one was yellow, one was blue.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't come out until you're green.
That's nice hazing.
What's funny is that you can get away with that biting the lip part. Because saying, like, well, I didn't want to have sex. and he took it too far, and I just bit his lip.
But she didn't say that.
But yeah. No, but she didn't say that. But you could take it that way, right. Like, almost, right?
Yeah.
Like
that's the first thing I thought of.
Right. Exactly. That's the first thing you thought of. But she kept the piece and she ate it later.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. And that's actually a little bit precursor, also. If you notice that, that's what the father had.
Yep, I know. Yep, yep. Yeah. I thought of that too.
Instead, it was the bottom and not the top.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's one really interesting thing. I'm glad you caught it as well.
Yep.
And I'm glad that they never really had a close-up shot of the father with the lip the whole time, right until the end.
Or it must have been more fresh.
Or it must have been more fresh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't notice it. That's what I thought, too. I almost rewound the whole thing just to see if I noticed
it. I almost wanted to also, but I didn't notice it. And I'm like, dude, this looks really pronounced. Maybe I was just noticing for things.
Lighting, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. So, yeah. So, there's that whole thing, right? So, and I think, honestly, she had more control because she even fucks the gay guy, go figure. And then she ends up biting herself to calm herself down, or to like orgasm.
Yeah, possibly. I think it was the orgasm. That's what I first thought.
Yeah.
But you're right. It might be both, the calming down too.
Calming down orgasm or both, thing. Yeah. And she even like can stay with him without having to bite him because I think she had that kind of control. Like,
or her sister didn't.
Or her sister didn't.
I think the sister proved that her control reached only when she's conscious. Maybe not when she's drinking or high or sleeping. Yeah. I think maybe the sleeping is her biggest problem. I didn't really pay attention to her room, which we're in several times. I think when she borrowed her dress and stuff like that. I didn't see anything that describes restraints or describes a complete loneliness because she might need that stuff if she can't control her urges when she's sleeping or unconscious.
Right.
Which might be another interesting view. Maybe I should watch it again.
right, but she stops eating completely after the finger thing.
Right.
She becomes super skinny even though she was already fucking skinny.
And she's having great pop music, by the way. Yeah. I love the pop music in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has this weird dance thing to the mirror that's clearly very much like the movie 13, for example. If you remember that movie. And it shows, like, this, again, more rebelliousness, but also, like, in the heart and the face of her hunger that she's avoiding. She's getting, like, these immense chills. It's clearly bad for her health. She's neglecting in her studies. You could tell by the fact that you just see papers everywhere not being worked on. You see it by context.
Yeah, yeah.
No one tells her, really, but
right.
You just know. But yeah, and then I just love how it progresses to her finding a middle, which is after the fight with her sister.
Well, she even has a nervous, like, there's this one scene where I didn't understand it until we started, not to started talking about it now, but
yeah.
I didn't understand it until a little bit after the movie, after I get all the whole picture, which was she throws up at one point, and you're like, well, is she becoming anorexic? But no, she throws up hair.
Hair, yeah.
From all the stress that she was doing.
Yep, all the stress eating.
All the stress eating of her hair, because she was chewing on her hair when she was getting yelled at by the
counselor. One of the few teachers we see or something.
Right, exactly.
The teacher that, that teacher was an asshole. The one that was like, I don't like those straight A students. I don't trust them. Fuck them. Right. You're going to fail. And shit like that was like weird.
No, like they put off the people who can become
other
great doctors that get intimidated by you and don't want to pass because they're like, well, I can't live up to that person. What does it matter?
Yeah, shit like that. Like, well, putting everything on her, like, go fuck yourself, dude.
Go fuck yourself, dude. Exactly, right. But it was more like a scare. I get where he was coming from. Kind of like scaring her to like...
Yeah, but there are infinitely better ways of getting that result.
For sure. But that scene where she's throwing up, and she's throwing up all her hair because she hasn't been eating anything either.
Yeah, no.
It's all bad for her. It was crazy. Kind of like a cat.
Yeah, I would think that... at first I was thinking like maybe they should have shown more scenes of her eating her hair because I only remember that one. But like, no,
that
I'm like, that's
also
fine, I guess. I'm like, yeah, that was fine enough. Yeah, that was cool. I don't need like three-prong sets for everything.
Right.
it doesn't have to be Casablanca and shit. So let's get to the... I mean, do you have something else? You want to get to the ending now?
No, we can get to it.
All right. So the ending, I'm going to describe it only briefly. I should say right before the very ending, they eat the fucking friend. I should say they... I don't know if she joined up on it. I don't think so.
It didn't look like it. So
I thought I saw blood on her clothing.
No, my first opinion was just that... And it looked on her face also, is that her wound just was bleeding through the night.
Yeah.
And it trickled down.
It just trickled down. That's why I first thought too. So which is why I was conflicted.
Right.
But clearly, Alex ate the fucking roommate, ate half his leg. It looked completely gross and awesome at the same time for a horror movie. I mean, it looked great effects. It looked completely believable. And the guy looked like he was sleeping before we realized that that was such a cool reveal.
Yeah.
And I knew something bad was happening or something was going to happen to Adrian was his name. I knew something bad was going to happen to him. He's just... don't trust her, any of them. Yeah. And then realized it was Alex killed him with a ski thing. That was a
ski pole. Yeah. Well, what was funny is that was a precursor because he was going to use that as a weapon because when they were getting hazed.
Yeah.
He said, "What do you have there?" He's like, "It's a ski pole." He's like, "What the fuck? How are you going to defend yourself from that?"
Yeah. When they were all being dragged outside.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was perfect. Perfect use again. And so they gave her, and so he gets killed, and then Alex gets busted for it. And at first I thought it was going to be another one of those, like, an extreme version of her taking the rap for both of them eating him. But it wasn't the case. It really was just Alex. And I guess she deserves it.
Well, yeah.
And I don't blame anyone.
It almost didn't look like Alex got busted. More like Justine turned her in. It almost looked like that.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely wasn't clear because it kind of skipped to them talking against the glass, you know. So it's been at least weeks or however long for her to be arraigned and arrested and all and sent to jail and all that. So, I don't know, maybe it works all in one day in France. I have no idea. That was very, I mean, just skips to that thing. I guess we don't need that information. I mean, infer whatever you want. You could say that it would make sense. I can see Justine completely turning her in. It's a huge disloyal thing that she did. It's the wrong thing that she did. It was her friend. She was trying to protect them, too, to a certain extent, before her hormones got the better of her and she had to bite herself and sex. You know, shit like that, but she was trying. So clearly, Alex fucked up. Anyway, so the ending, after that, they visit the sister. They're all home, the parents and Justine. And the mom goes for something.
The mom still micromanages her.
Oh, yeah.
So she doesn't finish her vegetables. You finish your vegetables. You're not allowed to clear the table until you finish.
Yeah. She's such a. Oh.
Yeah.
I almost said that other word. So she's doing that. And she's talking to her father. And the father is, who hasn't said much. You know, he's clearly not in charge.
There's one line that he says to his daughter after the finger thing when she's outside. She's like, "Are you
never have two daughters?
Never have two daughters." Yeah. That's the thing.
That was a perfectly funny, horrible line.
And then also, do you smoke? Who cares? Here's my cigarette. That's a French thing to do. Fucking French thing.
That is a very French thing to do. But also, she needed it. But no, that line. Thank you for reminding me when he says, "Don't ever have two daughters," because clearly he could only handle one.
Right.
Right. Like one's cat, maybe a boy. Right.
Yeah.
So we find out throughout the course of this conversation, which I don't remember entirely, but the gist of it is that he's trying to tell her, like, unlike Alex, your sister, you have to find a middle ground. You have to find a solution with this hunger of yours. Now, he doesn't say it in those words. Something about solution, yes, but it doesn't say hunger. I don't think I think he says it in a problem or your nature, right? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
He's telling her that. He's talking to her like he understands completely what she's going through and what Alex has been going through with this hunger thing, with this meat. And so he kind of reveals a solution that he has with his wife / Justine's mother. And he opens up his shirt, and throughout this time you see his fucking busted ass lip has been bitten out.
Yeah.
And his shirt, oh my god, his chest. Jesus, that was, I knew something was going to be there when he was starting to do that. Still didn't expect that. I knew to expect something.
Scarred up thing, man.
Very scarred up. You can see the old and the new scars.
Yeah, you can tell the recent ones, you can tell the old
like
ones.
Like he is sleeping with a Wolverine every night.
Right.
And he might as well be, because clearly the bites that the wife needs... when she's not being a vegetarian is through her husband.
I can only tell what his legs and back look like. They never go to the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, they must never. Always long pants. Yeah. God knows what it looks like.
Yeah.
Just not the face, not the hands. That's it.
Right. Well, things that are, you know. That
and feet,
you
I guess.
To, feet. Things
yeah.
That you need to
that's
use
it.
All the, time.
The rest, all yours, honey.
Maybe his ass. Ass would be a good place to go.
It's a great place. Yeah. I'm already hungry. And then the movie cuts. And Justine's clearly surprised, but not super surprised either.
Well, she's surprised that I think she's like, oh shit, it's like a family thing.
Yeah.
And if I have kids, they're going to have
There's
kids.
A movie called The Way We Are or something like that. You ever heard of it? The Way We Are, something like that. It's about this family of cannibals. And they're little girls, no boys, and family of cannibals, and the whole thing is that they're showing their version of their nuclear home life in a way, and it's not exactly what you're probably thinking. It's much more grounded, and definitely they're living in the forest and they meet people and they have to get people, and it's part of their religion in a weird way, but they're treating it as it's their day by day. And this movie ends in the same note that whole movie is like, so like this family of also cannibals, I guess, they're the same, just way different. It's more like nature based than it is religion based.
Right.
So yeah, I didn't mention that. fucked up. So did it make the movie a lesson for you? Did it make it worse or better?
No, but when I saw his lip, I was like, the fucking mom's in on it.
Yep.
I was like, oh, fuck me. And I was like, and then I was like, he starts unbuttoning his shirt. And I was like, fucking knew it. And my wife had started watching during the pinky scene. Anything before that, she didn't watch, right? And she was like, what the fuck are we, the whole time, she's like, what the fuck are we watching? Right? Really funny, right?
Yeah.
And then she was like, and then I got hungry towards the end. Basically when, like, the leg part, because it looked fucking great. Around that time, a little bit before that, I started getting hungry. And I was like, you want any of this? Because I was eating chicken. And I was like, and she's like, God, no. Like, how are you hungry right now? So I don't know. Their hunger made me hungry. Like, yeah. Just not for raw meat. Like,
yeah, I'm not going to eat you.
Right,
honey.
Exactly.
Honey.
Which was
honey.
But yeah, it was interesting reaction. She didn't see it coming. Like, I was like, I did not. Because she looked at her shirt when she unbuttoned the shirt. And he was like, oh my, she was like, oh my God. It's disgusting. Like, that's fucked up. And I was like, yeah. I'm surprised he's still alive. I'm surprised he's not, like, walking with a cane or in a walker. He lost a leg or something.
Yeah, I mean, they've been having that relationship for years?
Well, all the life, at least 19, 20, 20, 20 years? 25 years, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
23, 25 years.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I want to see their origin story. How do you get a guy like that to do that? And how does he, what does he get, I mean, he must love her. Or it has to be something he gets out of beyond that? I don't know.
It's a little bit of both. Something.
If he gets the best blowjobs, I have no idea.
Maybe.
Oh, is it worth it? I don't think it's worth it.
What's funny is that what I saw is that the gay guy could have been that to her.
Oh, and I thought of that in context afterwards. Yeah, but obviously,
in context.
She might be thinking, like, well, she must find someone. Maybe not a gay guy, because that sounds like not a very good idea. Unless you're keeping him and money and everything. I don't know. It had to be a very strange deal. Either way, it's fucked up, son. And it's clearly it's a very, also, I mean, we haven't mentioned this, it's funny, but we're both male also. It's a very, very feminist, not feminist, but it's a very feminine-driven movie, all female-driven movie. All the guys are being mutilated and or killed in this movie, every single one of them, from the guy in the paint to Adrian to the father, which are the only three men, right, in the movie I can think of.
The guys in the car.
And the teacher's an asshole. The guys in the accident are dead, and they're being licked on. You know, so no male survives this movie well.
Right.
The females are all really domineering everything about the movie.
For sure.
That's another interesting thing. Also directed by a female. So
there you go.
All that, you know, kind of goes with it. We never mentioned it. I don't know what it 100% means. I am a man, so how can I possibly even imagine anything? I'm not going to say stupid things like, oh, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a
right, right, right.
So I just want to put that out there. Check it out if you're interested in that angle, because I'm sure there is a very rich angle about that that I'm just not seeing right now because I was just so into the horror. So that's the ending on it. I also thought it was very cool. Like I said, it reminded me of the Cannibal Family from the other movie in a very cool way. Nice surprise. Really, really nice surprise. Oh, nice ending, I mean. Great ending of the movie. Anything else in the movie? I'm wrong?
No.
Yeah, we gave it a good shot. We gave it a long talk on that one. So I'm going to take another quick break. We'll be reviewing what's next here on the docket, the last film of the evening. It Comes at Night. What comes at night? We'll talk about that, slash we don't know either. Stay with us.
The way we like to run things, and we think it's important, you know, I think it's important to keep a routine and stay busy.
God, I'm sure I'm forgetting a few things.
There's plenty of time to work out all the details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overload. Well, I'll just settle in.
Yeah.
And we'll get working in the morning. And welcome.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, buddy. He's hiding.
Why are you hiding?
Secure within a desolate home as an unnatural threat terrorizes the world, a man has established a tenuous domestic order with his wife and son, but this will soon be put to test when a desperate young family arrives seeking refuge. This is It Comes at Night, written and directed, I believe some of it scored and edited, by Trey Edward Schultz, the man who made the wonderful Krisha from last year, K-R-I-S-H-A. I'm trying to tell everyone to watch it. It's an Amazon Prime movie, or from Amazon Studios. And it stars this movie, Joel Edgerton, Christopher Abbott, Carmen Ejogo, I hope I spelled that right, Riley Keough, oh my God, that's a strange one, it's K-E-O-U-G-H, fuck me on that one, Kevin Harrison Jr., also David Pendleton in the beginning, which we missed. So I'm going to say right now on that front, Ralph, you and I were in a strange screening First. Where, yeah. Where, like, we were like, okay, the movie started at 10. We saw this tonight, by the way, and we came in to record. Started at 10. We got there at 10:07, something like that. Because we're thinking, like, okay, I was coming from work. You're being lazy. And
I was waiting for my wife, but yeah.
Okay.
In the car for 5 minutes.
In the car for 5 minutes. You live so close to it. I had to rush my ass from Niles.
Well,
anyway.
She's like,
yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we got there, and the seller or whatever is telling us, there's no trailers for this movie. So it started already and shit like that. Like, what?
Yeah.
What? I'm like, we thought we had plenty of buffer time. We always, you know, like, I don't mind missing trailers. Fuck trailers. I'm always like, I always came in there with a stroll and a strut thinking I'm so early. But in actuality, we missed the first, let's just say 10 minutes.
I think it's because it was a Thursday release.
Yeah, but hasn't happened for all of them. And we've seen other, just as indie movies. Even as,
yeah, I just, you know, yeah, maybe.
I guess it's just a rare time.
It is.
So we missed the first 10 minutes, so we don't know how it really opens. For all I know, it says all the answers we need. I don't know.
Yeah, because I do have a big question for that.
Oh, we all do. We'll talk about the ending at the end. But without spoiling, what did you think of It Comes at Night in all its glory of... Because it's hailed pretty well as a great horror movie, by the way, right now, by a lot of critics.
What it does great, I'll speak to this right now, is it builds up this crazy... suspense to the movie every time it's nighttime. The lighting is amazing when it comes to nighttime. They depend on this lantern or flashlights that feels very authentic, like you're only seeing it through the lamp's perspective. Whatever the lantern lights up is what you get to see.
I almost opened by saying, instead of saying what you think of it, I should have opened with this. My original thought was, yeah, this movie is a slow burn horror.
Slow burn horror for sure, yeah.
And I was gonna say that all slow burn horrors, either you think either they're building tension for you,
sure,
or you think they're boring. I was gonna ask you which would you think.
Yeah, no, it builds tension for sure, clearly. And like overall, a lot of good stuff in the movie. The acting is really good on our main characters. I want to say maybe those 10 minutes will help the movie for me overall. It's not the greatest movie. I did have, like, an interesting ride. The ending is just really weird. We'll get to that when we get to that.
Yep.
So overall, I want to say first impressions, and really first impressions, because we just left the theater, like, a couple hours ago. I want to say I overall kind of liked it, but I do feel lackluster in the movie.
Okay. I feel like a lot of the power of this film, I should say, once the movie ended and we left the theater, does stem from its last moments. And that being said, and I want to take those aside, because the journey I had up until the resolution of these new people into these lives of this two families commingling, right? Up until that point, I was 110% into this movie and loving it. Like, I almost feel bad saying that I would give this less grade than because of an ending. And an ending that's only a few moments.
Right, but you've given movies a gigantic plus for their endings.
It's true. Because, you know, I like quoting that movie adaptation where the McKee character, played by Brian Cox in the movie, he tells them, you know, you can have plot holes, you can have flaws, you can have whatever, but while them in the end, you got to hit, right? Like, you know, the ending kind of makes the movie for a lot of people. It also breaks the movie for a lot of people.
Right.
I try not to be that person, but I also, but that those last few moments may actually take a star or two off, probably. I want to see what the discussion will bring, because I'm not totally down on it 100% either. I'm
neither
like 50-50 on it. I mean, the people around the movie theater definitely were down on it. Oh my God. I was laughing when that girl was saying about the movie. She was saying, "Trey, we're just go." When she was reading the credits, she's like, "Go fuck yourself."
Well, did you hear the group of people when we were leaving?
No, no.
They were like, "So I don't get to pick the next movie for movie night." I'm sorry that you guys had to go through that. Like, wow, you're apologizing for
really
the ending? Like,
yeah. Their reaction is very immediate and loud and insane. Okay. I would never think that. I would never think.
My wife immediately.
You could hear a pin drop in that movie theater. That's how everyone's tension levels were.
My wife in the movie was just like, "That's it, right?" That's literally how she ended it. And I was like,
And then she was like, let's go. Like,
yeah, she hated it. She had the same reaction.
Yeah. I had a conversation with her in the car, we'll get to in a bit. But,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's pin on that shit. So the movie is a great tension build. Like I said, we missed the first 10 minutes. For all I know, it says, like, oh, you know, credit lines or the world is ravaged by fuck tartary.
We don't know, yeah.
Right. But either way, we see that this family of three was a family of four that had to kill the grandfather. Right, the old man who got infected by this thing, and I don't know how infected he was because we didn't see that. We just saw the burning of it, so it sucked. But we imagine he had signs of it, and it's we know we can infer a lot in the world. And they're living in the heart to get food. They have water. That was a nice little system. Big house, also I love the house. Without the borders, boards and shit, it's a great house.
It looks great, yeah.
So I'm going to say that the acting performance is amazing. The tension is great. Rafi, you were saying about the light is 100% spot on because we don't see, like, if we don't see a character, it's because they can't see themselves either, you know, which is very much puts you in the shoes of these people. And it's not ever like a POV exactly, 100%, like a video game, but it's as much POV and you're as much as in their heads as you can possibly imagine.
I mean, I think one of the great
shots, dream sequences, too.
I think one of the great shots that they love doing in this movie is through the Red Door's perspective.
Yeah.
Where that corridor, when the guy comes through that another corridor.
Oh my God, they do like 50 of those.
Right. That's the shot that they love to use.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like you only see that light and you only get to see, like, as you get closer to the Red Door, it's a lot darker. Everything is, and the Red Door doesn't even look red; it looks burgundy.
It feels like the wood around it is sucking the light in.
It's
a strange feeling.
It was really.
I don't know if there's some CGI work involved, but it doesn't seem like.
Well, the very first time they make you feel like this Red Door is so important.
Yeah, I know.
If this Red Door is open, you're fucked.
It does, without saying a word, and he does say why eventually.
Without saying a word.
Yeah, yeah, it does say. He does explain Joel Edgerton's character, who is the most careful man in the world, to his detriment. We'll talk about that. Yeah, it's an amazing setup. This house is you don't see every room either. There's a lot of rooms you don't even spend that much time in, but you know that Red Door. You could draw. You could, if you were a painter, you could paint it right now. Same thing with a lot of the visuals that afflict the main characters, which could be either Joel Edgerton's character, the father, or the son, who has a lot of screen time and a lot of his POVs in the film, maybe even more than usual. Not only because he's a night owl. Meaning he just wakes up a lot because he has these nightmares, and we also get to see the nightmares. He's the only character we can see so much of.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's an interesting.
There's a third dimension to him.
I'm curious as to why. What do you think it was? A good surrogate. Like, is it, what the fuck is his name?
Well, I just think he's so impacted by his grandfather's death. He's so impacted by his grandfather's death that he has these nightmares.
Right, he's going almost through like a PTSD thing.
Right, he's young enough where he's still like very afraid and doesn't. Isn't sure of.
He always needs a light to sleep with.
Sure himself. Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, he's young enough to where he doesn't feel, because he's like 17 or 16, where he doesn't feel confident in his own decisions or whatever like that.
Yeah, his own skin probably.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And then, but he's at the same time he's old enough to understand a lot, and know that like a lot of it is in his mind. He just can't control it because he's not there yet.
Yeah. So I'm really curious. Do you think it was a wise decision then to follow him so personally compared to the rest? Because like I said, even though Joel Edgerton...
I honestly think so. Just for the fact that he's almost like a third party in this movie. Because you know how... where both families lie, right? Or more like both parents lie. Because both the kids in these families... have no say almost in their family say, even though one is like 3 years old or four years old, a little older, but and then one's 17, like, you know, almost an adult now, but they have no say regardless.
Nope.
But you know exactly where Joel Edgerton's character lies, and where the other what was the other father's name?
Paul was Joel Edgerton. The other character's name was Will.
Will, right? So yeah, where Will lies, you know where him and his wife lie.
Yeah.
So, and that's very like, because they're set in their ways, and compared to this guy, he doesn't know where he.
No, I'm with you. I was curious what your reason was. I think that's right. It would be a boring thing if we were following even the wives. I think it would have been interesting following the wives more than the men, but definitely not the men.
But I honestly feel if you gave it if you follow Joel Edgerton's character, I would be like, well, why can't we get Will's POV from it?
No, I was curious definitely about Will because, there's three levels of tension.
Yeah,
one is whatever's killing the world is there always.
Yes.
Which is the well, night.
This is like the zombie Walking Dead thing going on. Right?
But you don't even know if that's what it is. But whatever it is, it's horrible. Don't go out.
No, no, no. I mean the tension kind of thing.
The tension, right.
Where the zombies, like, you know the zombies, the threat that's always over.
Right. That's like the bedrock tension. That's what starts the whole thing. It's their constant. And then the other one is whether or not to trust Will. And there are several moments because sometimes you're not in Paul's head. Sorry, Paul is the main father and husband. Paul's head, you know that it's always set to caution. You know that even at his most trustworthiness of Will, let's say they were best friends for 5 years after all this, like you still have 5% of mistrust of him because that's how much he doesn't know. He doesn't trust. He can't. He just can't afford it.
He just cannot afford it.
So he's on that level so much that he puts somehow, but the camera, I was just into the movie, so I didn't pay too much attention, but it must have been amazing because it put me so much in his shoes. I was mistrusting Will by everything. Like, yeah, he didn't say he had a brother. I remember that. And he remembered it around the same time. I remembered it. And when they were talking, drinking booze, like, fuck. And he says, gives a good answer. Like, all right. I'm like,
but
I don't know.
I think the movie does a good job also. In the beginning,
right.
When we meet Will's character, where he's almost tortured out there.
Yeah.
Almost left for bait.
If I almost
you look
thought
at
that was going to happen to him, but
that's
it never did.
I thought, right, and it didn't happen.
I wonder why.
Right.
I feel like we're missing, I don't know, what those first 10 minutes did.
Right, but, exactly, yeah. Like I said. But that little thing where he's out there, nothing happens to him, okay? And you're like, what is it that's going on with them, right? That you know, that he's like, yeah, like, I basically passed a trial to be, like, let lived, right? And maybe get help from you guys, right?
Right.
I you feel for both towards the end, towards where we'll get into spoilers, where where Will makes decisions to do things. You feel for his character also because you're just like, yeah, like...
Oh, yeah, there's a certain point.
Where you're like, yeah, like,
where,
I wouldn't
they're
trust...
They're all
I
equal footing.
I wouldn't trust... Yeah. What's the guy's name already? Joel?
Paul.
I wouldn't trust Paul either, like...
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, like, and it's one of those decisions. It's one of those crazy decisions. But you do get the whole object of, like, yeah, Paul should not have any fucking faith in anything Will does. Even though, like, great guy, outstanding guy, but, like, you slip up once, my friend, I never trust you for anything. Like, how... And he does.
Yeah. All right, that's enough. We should definitely get into spoilers. I want to say that I do agree with following the 17-year-old son is perfect. For the same reason, the personal touch of the beginning with the grandfather dying adds to the paranoia, the growing up aspects, not PTSD, but the nightmares or hallucinations, possible hallucinations, not 100%, because there are times where I just feel like everything that was dreamlike was only dream. I don't think he was ever hallucinating anything. I think he was probably imagining or thinking that something will pop up in real life when he was walking around, but nothing ever actually did. Except for that one possible scene with the dog, which we'll get to. Would you recommend this movie, though?
It's hard. And it's hard for the ending. And I hate to say it that way. And it's hard for me not seeing the beginning also, because I don't know what we missed out. Even if it could be a super minor key detail. And I bring up key detail because I honestly think the kid had a spare key that we don't know about. Yeah. That's one of my hypotheticals here that he...
Well, don't spoil it. Right. We're not there yet, spoilers. I was just saying, do you recommend it before we go into spoilers?
Oh, yeah. I would say yes. Overall, I would still recommend it.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. And we'll talk about the ending.
Yeah.
So, ending or spoilers starting now. You think Travis had a key?
Yeah.
To the red door. Wait.
No, not to the red door. That's to the outside
door. To the outside door, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the red door only had the lock, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Edward, the little kid, could not have reached that lock.
That was too far. Too
so, hard. Who opened the door? Travis?
Yeah.
100%.
The way I'm going with this is... It's... Okay. So, I have three hypotheticals. And two are basically one hypothetical. So, it's almost two hypotheticals. And I'm put them out there for you, okay?
All right.
First hypothetical. There's another being, right? Something, a monster or a creature or something out there, right?
Or a human.
Or a human,
yeah.
Right? That got it and has always been in there with them.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, for the longest time, he's in the basement the whole fucking time.
That is the first
he's
thing.
He's fucking with them.
That is the first thing I
this
thought
This is like
also.
A funny game shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like thing, like yeah. That, right? Only not funny game is, and it's just more like, I am this overlaying threat regardless, right? Mm-hmm. And I can come in and out at my whim, right?
Yeah.
So that was my one, that's one of my hypotheticals, and I'm glad you had the same. My second, and I'll and it's gonna be like a two-part thing, which is second and third, right?
Yeah.
Is that what's the kid's name? Joel?
Travis.
Travis.
The kid, yeah.
Travis. The dream sequence of Travis isn't actually a dream sequence, and it's actually him going out. And specifically the one where he goes out for the gun, and he has a lantern, and he flashes, and he's looking for the dog. And it
hear the dog barking.
You hear the dog barking.
Yeah.
And it all stems from after the dog.
But doesn't that happen after they find the dog dead or dying?
No.
I thought it happened after.
No, it happened that night, and then he finds the dog.
Okay. And then he finds the door open, you mean?
Well, that's what the dog is also.
Right, right, yeah. Okay, make sure.
So it's all him doing all these things, looking for them. And what's it called? And he
so you think he's actively hallucinating his grandfather, puking black blood?
I honestly feel, though, it could have been from, this is where my two-parter goes, where it's either that from some of it at one point after the dog thing, he actually did go out, and he wasn't hallucinating it. He just did it, right? And he managed to come back home and just, like, left the door open for the dog or something happened, right? He's been going out. Or, in reality, he's always been going out, and it's always been him who goes out every time because he actually never sleeps. He just hallucinates through the whole thing. And he's always been going in and out of the house.
What about instead of hallucinating, we say something like sleepwalker?
Yeah, you can just...
But they mentioned sleepwalking in the movie. Let's just don't sleepwalk.
Yeah, yeah, you can just sleepwalk.
And I just wish that somebody... So after all this incident and they discover, like, oh, the door was open before, right? Before Travis got to it, he didn't open the door. When they were talking about it and around the dinner before they decided to separate for a few days, which is... I'm like, oh man, Paul, no, that is your downfall.
That was his biggest downfall.
That was his worst mistake.
Honestly, what he should have said
because he was overly cautious to the point nah.
The thing to do there would have been honestly like, we're on lockdown mode, we're all not going out.
Yeah.
And that's what he should have said. We're on lockdown mode, we're all not going out.
And I would have said, like, okay, clearly the kid could not reach the lock. We're not blaming him. I would have said that immediately because clearly can't reach it.
And I'd be
clearly
like,
cannot reach
it. Like, and we're taking waves of sleep.
And we're going to find out, and we're going to search throughout every inch of the house in case someone's in here.
And the only way that we're doing is me and you. We take first shift, you take second shift.
Yeah.
And it's only the only persons we're trusting. And obviously, maybe respective wives are awake with each other.
Yeah, I would say have one of the opposite wives, so that way no one's...
Exactly.
Unfair advantage over the others.
Right, exactly. And that's how I would have done it.
Yeah,
but that's his downfall is the fact that he just doesn't want to trust anybody. And he pushes them away completely.
Yeah.
But my thing is that I think there was a spare key to the house that the son knew about and he always kept, or that the father had, right? And then they had their own key to their house. Because it looked like it was the father's house and not their house. The grandfather's house.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I honestly think he has a spare key that he just never told the parents about. Because the kid was a sly kid. He was walking around everywhere.
Yeah, no one heard him.
No one heard him.
He was going through crawl spaces or attic places, hearing conversations and shit.
He made noises, like closing doors and everything. You heard creaks and stuff like that.
I mean, the first things we see in opening after the opening is that we see him hearing his parents talk.
Right, exactly. But you never actually hear, like, he doesn't make enough noise where you would hear, like, me stomping around the house.
Right.
And he's always wearing socks.
I really thought that was going to be a plot point, like someone would hear him eventually.
Honestly,
but no one ever heard him.
Yeah. So yeah, my big thing is like he was always infected. And I had to say the
brigade. Oh, you think so?
He was always infected the whole time. And he's been going in and out. And he's just been like, he's been going in and out and just whatever crazy randomness, getting them infected or whatever, right? Or he went out after the dog. But I mean, leaning more towards the dog one. That he went out for like that one dream, that he thought it was a dream, that he had already done it. It was like it was him dreaming of something he already done. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe. I think that I do think that the biggest, most obvious answer is that Travis did it. Yes,
for sure. Yeah.
Travis is the most obvious, logical, even illogical answer.
Yeah, he heard the dog bark and he went out.
No way to will. There's no even mention or thoughts. Or clue to an accomplice or anything like that. It was the way it was all set up, even his torturing thing, being outside all day and all night in the beginning when we first meet him. I'm like, all that was, no, man, it's just not possible. You know, I just don't see it as possible. Even when they got almost gunned down by those two outsiders when they were driving, like, I was convinced, and the montage of time passing with them working together, like, I just feel like it's no way. It's such a long con for no reason.
Yeah.
At first I was thinking maybe they're learning their ways how to make better water and shit, but no, they learned it already. So anyway, doesn't matter. Point is that I'm with you. I don't think it goes well, not Edward, of course. I don't think it's Paul or the wife, right? None of those people make sense. Travis makes sense.
Yeah.
To me, clearly, I've always thought the most logical thing for me is that I think he did get infected when he got the dog.
Okay.
Because the dog was already infected.
Okay.
I think he was just going through a combination of like hormones or puberty growing up thing, and then as well as PTSD about his grandfather.
Yeah.
Or just trauma, just fucking normal trauma. And it's I think those combination of things made him not forget, but maybe sleepwalk, maybe just internalize something that should never have happened. Got the dog, infected the kid. The kid was being infected, and that's how it started. That's why the third act got so bad.
Yeah.
For everyone. And what is this movie's biggest conflict? And that is, I mean, to me, it's just mistrust. I mean, more so than the infection, because that's just what gets everyone here.
Yeah. I have a question. Right? We'll get to it in a bit. Here,
seems like mistrust is the biggest problem here.
Yeah.
I don't think any one person is a bad guy as much as any one person is a good guy.
Yeah, there's a famous quote, and I forget who says it, but the people who do the most damage are the people who believe that they're doing something right.
Right, yeah, I've heard that, something like that.
Some very famous, I forget who, but we have Paul, who thinks he's doing something right,
yeah,
where he ends up killing everybody, which is crazy, but he believes he's protecting his family, yeah, and he does the most damage. And you have, what's it called, he's believing he's doing something right also, and protecting his family and trying to get out.
Hey, so he keeps a gun.
Right, but not only, exactly, he keeps something hidden, right? He loses even more trust, right? And he keeps, he puts his family in more danger, right?
His biggest mistake was trying for the gun the second time.
Right.
Exactly. Because I think, I mean, as far as we go, I don't know.
His biggest mistake was...
I mean, that was too late, I guess.
No, his biggest mistake was attacking Paul the way he did, is that he should have just got Paul down, disarmed him, and ran, and the wife wouldn't have shot him. She hesitated too long. She didn't want to shoot him.
Yeah.
She really didn't.
I know.
Had he not...
But that was a crazy tense moment, because I really thought the wife was... Because the wife was saying things like leading up to them approaching the bedroom door of Will's place, yeah, is that she was saying, like, they're going to ask for water and food, would be fair, and then they'll come back later again when they're hungry.
Right.
She was saying all these very obvious things, like, everything you're saying, lady, is leading to you killing them.
Right, exactly.
Right, so...
Yeah, what's interesting, though, is... what's it called? What was I going to bring up? I already forgot that was what I was going to bring up to you. I forgot.
So, you're talking about the time he fucked up the most, and when he bum-rushed Paul... In the stairs?
No, when he starts beating him outside.
Outside, okay.
Because, like, say... That was his biggest mistake, is just that...
Well, that leads directly to this.
what did you think of the kid when he wasn't... When Will was saying, don't open your eyes? Was it because he was infected? Or was it because he didn't want to show his kid all the dangers?
Well, that's an interesting thing about the movie, is that the movie is kind of like... It's very shy about showing you infections.
It is really shy, except for the grandfather.
Well, just hallucination. It could be all wrong.
So. Where do you fall in line with it, though?
No, I go with he was infected.
You think he was infected?
I think he was crying way too much, too directly. Like, I mean, the time span of Travis finding out, making sure it was a kid crying, going over there to hear it, coming back, waking them up, deciding the plan, all that time. The kid's still fucking crying bloody murder. The kid's, I think he's going through intense pain through the infection or whatever it's called. Yeah. Or hallucinations or whatever.
I thought it was more like...
Yeah, just that was my...
No, I could have gone both ways, and I'll defend the other way. Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Just a kid having a...
No, just to spite you. No, just to spite you. But no, I think Will... I do agree with you more to the infection era, but just to defend the other argument is that I think Will, they're having an argument, and the kid's getting worked up because they're having an argument, mm-hmm, and he pulls out a gun, and the wife gets hysteric, and she's making the kid hysteric. So I have a gun. We're going to do this. We're going to defend ourselves, and he's just getting hysteric already. So she's making the kid more hysteric, and the kid doesn't want to be awake, and they don't want to get the fuck out. They want to get the fuck out. So it's just getting him into this hysteric moment, yeah, and the kid feeds off that energy.
That's true. And also, they've both been stuck there at least a day in a room all day.
Well, yeah, at least the whole day, yeah.
At least. I think it's been 24 solid hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be either or. I think I'm right, though. No, I'm kidding. I think it's just as possible. So I love how the movie makes you think that. But I think as these world-ending problems, and I love the ones that are minutiae. They're about X amount of people. Like, the reason I love Dawn of the Dead is because it's just a group of people in one mall, right? It's very simple. You don't have to take it globally. This is the same thing. It's small even, right? I love these movies because it's never the disease, never the zombies. It's always the humans that are the problem, and it's same thing here.
Yeah. We are, ourselves are our Dawn.
And then it's a big fuck you to the possibility of human thoughts, and also, like, it doesn't matter. The more emotional you are, you will still die almost, not just as fast. You'll die faster, but you'll die you'll be just as dead as the most logical human being, because Paul was the most logical human being, and look where it got him.
Yeah, they also don't explain his bum knee. Did he get it hurt where?
I mean, it could have been at the beginning.
Yeah, it could have been, right? Yeah. Like, we don't get that explained.
We're going to put all the problems.
We are putting the problems.
No, at the beginning. All the solutions.
Well, like, well, how else did he get outside, though? Explain if he doesn't have a key.
What do you mean, who got outside?
Travis.
What does that have to do with the bum knee?
No, I'm just...
Okay. You're just going on a different...
We're blaming everything in the last 10, in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, or maybe... He took the key off the corpse before they put him in the grave, the grandfather...
That's what I'm thinking.
Or from his room or something. Like, yeah. Or he gave it to him as he was dying from the sick... Okay, yeah, anything.
Right.
10 minutes. I don't know. And it's funny because you went out for popcorn because you're like, well, I'm late anyway.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I could tell that was your thinking. I was like sitting there watching, talking, what happened?
I was thirsty and I was like, I'm just going to have Oscar catch me up. Like, yeah, fuck that.
So anyway, when you went out, apparently it was still like a giant blank opening of the movie because the title card hadn't come up yet.
Oh, there
it came
was
up
card.
While you were out.
Oh, there was a title card.
Yeah,
that's cool.
There was a title card.
Because what I saw is that it was daytime and they were carrying a body in the wheelchair, in a wheelbarrow. Hmm. And he was still alive. He was talking to them.
Yeah.
Or I heard him talking, and then I was like, and then they went and they threw him in the bot, and they were going to bury him. And I was like, oh, okay, so he died, or he was like gasping for breath or whatever. And I was like, okay, they're going to bury him. I was like, Oscar will catch me up after this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go get something to drink. I'm thirsty as fuck. Like,
yeah, I was trying to piece it all together, but they, you know, burned him. And that's it. Yeah. So, what did you? So talk about the wives for a bit. What do you? Okay. And also, I got to say, like, I think Trey Edward Schultz is doing this on purpose. Like, this Trey Edward Schultz, I should say, because I said it all in one sentence. I think what he's doing that's really cool and fucked up for us is that he's putting us in a hunter-gatherer situation.
Okay.
I think on purpose. Like, not just, like, with the montage, but kind of with the montage. I mean, they're clearly doing things that keeps the women safer and indoors. I'm not saying this is all wrong, but I'm saying it's very, like, classic nuclear family hunting and gathering situations where you have to survive this way. And I think that the fact that it's like that automatically brings, like, this ideal of where the leadership is coming from is, unfortunately, to the people that make the worst decisions. I'm not saying they would have made better had the women been in charge necessarily or making all the decisions.
Sure.
I mean, Paul's wife does make some very good points. Like I said, she's the one who advocates for, like, we should probably not give them food and water, even though they deserve it. They'll just come back for more when they're hungry again. Like, very solid.
Right. They know where they can get it.
Right. They probably have had this happen before or something like it, right?
Well, we don't know. Yeah.
So, yeah, all very interesting stuff. I don't know. Did it make you feel like, I don't say classic, or did it make you feel like, oh, did it bring you back to your farming days? But, like, did that make you feel abnormal, strange, familiar, maybe? It's not, all these are not bad answers, but... What did it make you feel like?
I mean, it did feel like a classic role, if that's what you're thinking.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it felt that way, but at the same time, you had an explanation for, like, well, these guys, because obviously his trade was construction and a bunch of other things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they work with their hands and they do all these things. Like, he knows how to cut wood already. Like, he knows how to do all these things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not that they don't, the women didn't have the interest, but it's like, well, we're already doing the heavy lifting load. And we want to protect you guys, and we don't want to put you in situations like that, right? Did feel like a very classic and very familiar situation.
Yeah.
But no one was ever opposed to it, you know? And no one was ever asking, like, should we take shifts or anything like that?
Yeah.
I think it's just the wives were just like, we're going to depend on you here. And you put yourself in the scenario.
No, I felt like everyone felt like they were comfortable in their
everybody
roles.
Everybody felt comfortable in their roles. The only one who didn't feel comfortable was Travis because he wanted to do more.
Because he's the gawky teenager.
Exactly.
He's the only person with hormones that isn't coupled.
Right.
Also.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, not an awkward scene where...
Well, I mean, he made it awkward. He didn't have to, but it was awkward when he was talking to Will's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Who's also, I mean, I think closer to Travis's age by the looks of her than it was Will's. But I can't tell with something with women. She could be 50. I have no idea.
Sure.
She's not, but whatever. She could be 30. I mean, well, she looks 18 to me.
I think comparison, Will, Travis's parents are like in their 40s, right?
Yeah.
Late 30s, 40s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then these guys are probably
just a younger family.
Probably like young 30s or maybe late 20s, but I would say young 30s.
She looked like early 20s.
She looked like, late 20s, yeah.
Okay, fine. Clearly, I have a higher hope. I'm kidding. Anyway, she was. I mean, and obviously, she could have looked like a 50. It doesn't matter. And she's the only other woman in the house.
Right.
What the fuck is he gonna do? There's no TV.
Right. Well, actually, there's another mistake that I made a mistake in that Will makes a mistake in, where it's when he lies, where he fucks up his lie that they had a brother.
Was it a lie? You think?
I think it was a lie. I think there was somebody else that they had to kill, or something or in that nature. And maybe it was a friend, maybe it was her brother, or it was a situation where they were with somebody beforehand, and in case if he had to go and or something happened, I think he was, honestly, the story was, it was more like, I need to lay on the fucking charm to this guy. And yeah, I had a brother with this and that. Like, we were just fucking spewing out information to this guy. Like, I need to make sure I live.
So you think the brother existed or didn't exist?
I would say didn't exist.
So you think he's more truthful in his drinking, comfortable area with Paul in the room?
Well, he slips versus... up. He feels comfortable.
Okay, so you think it was a slip up? He doesn't have a brother.
Yeah, I don't think he has a brother. And I think he's comfortable in saying that he doesn't. You know, he was like, oh, I feel comfortable. It's a nice environment.
I'm kind of leaning to, okay, like, I think I have to believe both versions, both of his talks. Okay. I think when he was saying brother, when he later corrects that it was actually his brother-in-law. I think I have to believe both because there's no evidence.
Sure.
And there's nothing in the movie to tell me that there was something else for me to infer a backstory. Or because I thought when he made that slip up in that room, I'm like, the whole time, because the movie's so tense. Again, I don't know how the guy does it. It keeps me so fucking wound up by that point, right away, I guess. That the whole time I'm thinking, like, okay, there's definitely someone out there in the woods, and it's his brother. And it's like, he's just like, or his half, doesn't matter what kind of brother. There's another person out there right now in the woods surveying the whole time, waiting for the right opportunity.
Yeah.
Or something. That's my first thought. And I kept looking for it the whole time, and it never happened. And when the dog ran out, Travis, the idiot, is chasing it, and he sees something. I never looked so hard at a fucking screen before. I'm looking for something in those woods.
Yeah. What did you think of his drawings?
I don't know how much effort I should put into it. When I first saw it, I was like, I mean, it didn't seem like it was going to lead anywhere, honestly, and it didn't. But like, I was just thinking it's probably part of his dreams or... probably just depressed and just being ennui and gothic and shit. But I didn't think of anything too particular. Did you think of something on his dreams?
I thought maybe it's something maybe that was a precursor of something that he saw. What they can become or something.
Right, it's possible that that's how they turn out if you don't kill them.
Well, I think he saw it. It was daylight, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't come at night, so...
Yeah, the title is kind of misleading because I don't know what comes at night other than... I think the night is the idea is that you can't see what's coming at you. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. Yeah. So we're talking about other humans or the disease itself. Whatever telltale signs there might be, whether in animals or something else, which again, we don't know. That's the closest I can think of why the title of the movie is It Comes at Night. Now let's talk about the ending. You ready?
Go ahead.
So the lead up to the ending is that Paul kills Will, his kid, and his wife.
The kid is an accidental shot. He's trying to kill the wife.
Yeah, I think he would have killed the kid anyway.
I'm not saying he wouldn't,
right?
But he does kill the wife. He does kill the kid first.
And the wife is yelling at him to kill him.
D-bag. Oh, the look on his face looks like he's like.
I don't know how he pulls that off. That complex,
right? Because he just looked did cold-blooded murder, but at the same time, he's just like that look. He's just like, fuck me, and then he comes to the realization.
Like, how did I get in this position?
Well, it's not even it's more like that look also, but the look ends up becoming, I'm here now, I might as well end it.
Yeah, no, that too, yeah.
Yeah, that's the
D-bag like, look.
Fuck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But also, it's for his family. I mean, fuck, I believe him, but yeah. I don't like any of it. It's like the idea of war, too, like, right? Why you have to kill so many people. Right. So he does that. All these people are fucking dead. Will fucking hears his family getting killed because he's still not dead yet. He still dies after that because he's gut shot by the wife. I think through the back or something. Yeah. Horrible scene. So, strange thing happens. There's a skip of time. We don't know how much. It could just be that night. Because my understanding is that the teeth spreads fucking fast. Yeah. So, the grandfather, he said, you might have been in the bathroom. Maybe you missed this. I don't know.
No, I got
it. He said something about, like, it takes an hour or a day or something.
No, within the day, you'd notice.
You'd notice everything, right?
That was the whole purpose of keeping Will on a tree. That or, like, either he gets caught by the whatever, if there's a creature.
Right, or he has it and he's going to experience the symptoms. We don't know 100%, but I knew it right away because I didn't see the nightlight. He's lying on his bed, and there's no light there to protect him, as it was always before in every other fucking scene. So, like, oh, shit, he's got it. He's infected. Yeah. I thought that immediately. And now I almost thought he was dead, but he was breathing. He was sleeping. He was different. It didn't look dead. And then cut to, I don't know how much time, but whatever. Cut to then after that, he's disease-ridden. I think he's hallucinating more, right, as awake, not just dreaming, because his mother's talking to him. Mm-hmm. And, what happened after that? Remind me.
His mother's saying everything's gonna be okay, right?
Right, right.
And you see her disease ridden also.
Yeah, right? We're starting to. Well, their eyes are sunken and shit.
His arms completely disease ridden.
Yeah.
And then you see her disease ridden, and then it cuts to Will and Paul and the wife. I forget her name.
Yeah, they just skipped to, like, they must have skipped. Either they left them there, knowing that they're all gonna die now,
and they're on the dining room table. And she looks as he's written, and he looks as he's written.
Well, he looked complete, like he's got like a bender and worked 12 hours a day. Yeah. Like he looks completely fucked up.
Yeah, well, he looks fucked up from when he just got hit in the face with the butt of the.
Yeah, also. So I'm not 100% on his tale, but he's been close to all these people.
For sure.
So most likely he's on his way out. So I don't think they buried Travis necessarily, but he's not at the dinner table. Which that shot, also, they use a lot of mirror shots too. Like they would shoot a shot of all three family eating. When they're starting in the movie, and it's very normal blonde day, and then one with the Will and the family, and one with just Will, and then the montage, and you see the same shots of the family, and at one point you see the same three, the way they usually sit, and now at the very end it's the worst fucking because he's not there, Travis, and they're both fucking dying. So the movie ends. It cuts seemingly, but it does cut, not seemingly, it does fucking cut to the ending. But what is the problem with that ending? Let's talk about that. Does it make you... you go first. Okay, I asked you.
Well, honestly, I think the problem is that there's... Luke's problem would be it leaves it open, right? To whatever interpretation. The problem is that it doesn't explain anything, for me anyways. It doesn't explain jack shit. Like,
what do you mean?
As in, like, we never know... I never know what's real or what's not. Was his hallucinations always real from beforehand? Like him hallucinating to go out to this door and he opened it and this crazy thing, right?
I think the open door leaves too many open questions.
It does, I think so. And did he get infected from there, from whatever beforehand?
Well, that's what I think for sure.
Right, exactly. But like, that's what I think also, right? But, and then did they kill him already? Is he up there? Were they too fucking... Not they just couldn't.
How many people can they fucking shoot right now?
There's so many things, right? And just like, this guy looks defeated. Like, is he about to kill his wife? Like, there's a lot of questions. Like, where do we go from here? Like, everything went down to the shitter after they killed the family. And it's like, is it because after they killed the family, everything went down to the shitter? Like, there's a lot of weird, random, open ended questions, and it just ends abruptly. With I think she says everything's gonna be okay. Right.
I mean, I think Paul was infected the second he was told by Will to take off the mask in this kid's room because he must have all been infected. Sure. They're stuck in that room with that infected kid, which I believed the whole time anyway, and clearly was right. I mean, actually, not clearly was right because I didn't see the symptoms on them. Yeah. I didn't even see the kid.
Well, you don't even see anything on
them. You don't even see the kid that well
right.
at all. You see him in a faraway shot for a little bit, but that's it. So I think, on one hand, I can see a Trey Edward Schultz type, meaning like someone very logical and very into the whole tension and building this amazing, crazy, like, parable almost of trust and human condition and whatever, because probably the movie's about that. And really, the movie's about the journey and the result of death. I can see him just say, like, they're all infected. It's pretty easy. Just cut. They're all dead. Every character you met in this movie is dead now. What does it matter what happens outside? Like, just cut it there.
On the other hand, I'm almost thinking, like, was there another scene that they just cut off or something? Like, one of those things?
It did kind of feel like that also.
But it felt incomplete because of where it cuts, which is in the middle of a stair. I know, like, how can you define the middle of a stair? I don't know. But whatever it is, you can define it by watching that movie.
Well, you didn't get a reaction from anybody. You didn't get a reaction of, is Will sick or Will sick?
I don't think that matters. I think it's obvious that they're all sick.
Sure. Fine. You can go with that route, right? That everybody's sick. Paul's sick. The wife clearly looks sick. The kid looks like he's dead already or about to turn into whatever.
But at the very least, the whole movie is described that they wanted to do anything to protect their family, which is what Will was doing. And the fact that their family is now dead, meaning Travis, what's the point?
Right.
Well, like, either way.
Well, yeah, the fact same that result. More like the look isn't there to tell you, like, am I going to kill her before I die? Or are we just going to let each other turn into something? Where is the end game for that? Or is it just like, fuck it, there.
Why does that matter?
But you don't get anything because it's just like, because you've been getting it the whole movie. You've been getting their reaction.
I'm with you. I don't like the way it ended.
Right.
I'm saying, though, why does it matter if they're all in the same result as them being dead?
But we don't know that, though.
I think we do know that, I'm saying. Because if they're all infected, who cares who kills us?
But
who,
are
what
you,
first?
When you're infected, are you dead?
If you're infected, you're dead. Well, if we saw nothing before in the evidence, what's the point of seeing them turn into zombies or something?
What's I'm saying? Well,
I mean, what's the point, though?
We don't know, though. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I think the point, the thing is that it's a horrible infection, and it always leads to death at some point. That's what we know.
I guess.
So I think there's a lot of stripping down of something. Like, we don't get any frosting on this movie.
Right.
No frosting. There is nothing, no wasted scene.
I think it's also...
And I think maybe to its detriment,
the fact that the movie is... It's a whole struggle, the whole everything.
It's a gigantic struggle, yeah.
It's a gigantic struggle about what right decisions, in air quotes, to the right decisions, should we make, right? And then how it all fucks at the end for making a wrong decision, or possibly a wrong decision, right? So which one is it? And then just to leave it at the end where there's no decisions, there's nothing else, it's just there.
Yeah.
We're just leaving it to interpretation that they're dead.
Yeah.
That they're going to die. We know they're going to die, right? But we can say that about any fucking movie. Everybody fucking dies.
No. But I think they're going to die that day.
Right.
Not think. I feel it. It's in my bones. I know
it. I feel it in my bones.
You know, but you're right. It does feel incomplete. I'm with you. The ending, it does take down a whole star for me, which is unfair, but totally fair. Because it feels incomplete. No matter how completely... resolved Luke, whatever he says about incomplete endings, it's not going incomplete. They're all dead at the end.
Yeah,
every person.
I honestly feel it's just the fact that Paul's face is all fucked up because it's obviously like the same day or the next day, right? Paul's face is all fucked up.
I think this movie should have come out like in another time where we don't, you know, pick out everything and make theories all the time, because I think in this day and age this movie's not going to go well.
Yeah,
more so than another time. That's still the movie's fault
I'm not trying to say, like, I need to know everything. I'm a scientific ending or anything like that.
Yeah.
But
you have doubts.
We have doubt, yeah.
Right. If this is a case, this is not guilty.
Sure.
Or guilty, whatever one is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I just honestly don't know if it's... Because the big fear in the beginning of the movie, right, is that you get infected, but what happens after you're infected? Do you become a zombie?
Well,
no
one lets them become a zombie,
right?
Yeah.
We don't know. Do you like start sprouting spores everywhere and you infect everybody else?
Last of Us and shit?
I don't know what it is, right?
Right.
So how infectious is it, right?
Yeah.
Or what is it that you do end up becoming? Do you just rot and you die and then you just become this infected blob, right? We don't know what it is, right? Because they just go kill and burn it, right?
Right, yeah.
That's exactly what they do with the grandfather. Like, he was infected, he was dying, they're going to go fucking kill it and burn it. Luckily for them, they have gas masks and latex gloves everywhere.
Oh, he's super, yeah. Super.
Right. And they, so for that, right, for that reason.
Yeah.
So at the end, when you have this, like, you're in the same spot as you were in the beginning, and you hope you want to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
You hope the movie would give you some answer, and it doesn't.
I'm with you.
To its detriment, I just feel like it ends.
It's like I'm half with you, maybe.
Right. Yeah. It just feels like it ends to its detriment just really quickly. You know what would have made the movie a little bit better for me? If she just said, I love you. And it would have ended like that. And I would have been like, fuck, they're going to die. It's over.
I know.
Nothing happens. And it would have been great.
Honestly, with you. I want to interview Trey Edward Schultz.
just
so bad. Right. Yeah, if she said that, or it's like they spent another beat with them and then slowly fade to black.
Yeah.
I think that would have said probably the same thing you're saying.
And I get where the movie is trying to go.
which is
I mean, obviously, a lot of people don't want direct answers, clear and cut, you know, because they watch fucking blockbuster movies. Sure. They're not going to like it no matter what.
Right.
So we can't make them happen.
No, no, but at the same time, we and you are in agreement where we know they're going to fucking die. If not that night,
the next
one. In 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
They're dying in 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
That's, we're in agreement with that. But it's like, we've seen everything else. Why don't we get to see that?
I know.
Like, and that's where it is, right?
It's possible because Travis is dead and it's been his point of view primarily.
And that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, very logical, but if that's the case, still incomplete.
If that's the case, why didn't it end it with the mom saying, you could have ended it before. With the mom saying, everything's going to be okay.
Oh, it could still be like gasping. Well, you're right. It doesn't crack. Or track, really.
Right.
All right. Well, anything else on the ending? On this movie in general?
No. Like I said, it is...
I still recommend it. The journey's still 99% awesome. I mean, whatever it gets to that point. And, yeah.
Yeah, there's some good acting. There's some good, really good lighting.
I will not say fuck this movie ever.
Yeah.
I think I may watch it again and maybe in context with...
I will read some reviews now. I will agree with you. Like,
see what's up.
I'd probably rate this normally 4 stars anyway. It's not a 5-star movie regardless for me.
Right. Not for me either.
But I'd probably rate it 3 stars. Just
great work of tension. Jesus Christ, the tension.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I could feel it in the air in the movie theater.
Yep.
All right, so that is It Comes at Night, available everywhere. Check it out if you are interested. That is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. We don't have an animation recommendation this week, mainly because we kind of do it on a whim and also based on how much time we've used already. And we've talked a lot on these movies, Rob, so we gave like 40 minutes plus on the pop, you know. Anyway, but for our stuff, here's our stuff. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. And you can follow me personally on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Sorry. Ralph?
You can follow me at GamerRalph with 2 R's and an F.
If you're interested also, I produce another show, a supernatural podcast called Supernatural Current Studies, or I should say sos-radio.com, as you can find all that information. SOS-radio is the name of the podcast you can find on iTunes. We talk about all supernatural stuff. We're planning this big trip for Area 51 in Shed, Nevada. We have the whole thing planned. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So check that out.
Also, don't forget, if you want to reach us on Twitter for any hate mail or anything like that, at Bly Noir.
Right. Bly Noir. How do you spell, spell it?
At B the at sign, and it's BLINDNOIR.
Yeah, that's right, folks. If you help us figure out this iTunes shit, you know how they have those iTunes algorithms? They always talk about the iTunes algorithms.
Listen, you know when you like, even on an app,
we look for stars. We like stars.
Listen, you have an app, and it tells you, "Do you love our app?" We're almost saying that to you,
right? But don't click no thanks,
right? We're almost saying that to you. But instead,
click yeah.
We're telling you to just like put 5 stars for us.
Yeah, it's really easy. There's nothing harming.
Right.
Nothing less than 5. Why would you put less than 5?
Right.
Be nice. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And if you don't want to do that, then go fuck yourself.
And then we get no source.
Right.
Remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. Hopefully this one comes out on time. Last one came out a few hours late. Sorry about that, guys. Next time is next show will come out June 23rd. And we'll be doing next stop our animation bracket, another one of mine, a documentary animation film called Waltz with Bashir. Hopefully you can find it somewhere. It's not very easy accessible though. We'll be reviewing also, Ralph, you're picking the movie, so one of them is Cars 3, is that right?
One is Cars 3, listen, these are...
Or 3 Cars.
No, Cars 3.
Is it like three what's that movie with George Clooney?
Who cares?
Fuck. I lost it.
3 Amigos?
No.
He's not in it.
He's a soldier.
That I definitely don't know.
Three Kings.
I didn't see that.
Okay. Well, 3 Cars, 3 Kings. Anyway, whatever, Ralph.
George Clooney is a soldier? Okay.
Yeah.
A Roman soldier?
No.
That one.
Oh, what was that? Oh, you're talking about Hail Caesar.
Yeah, Hail Caesar.
He's such a fucking fuck.
Regardless. Cars 3.
Right.
I know Cars 2 wasn't great. No one saw Planes.
I didn't like Cars 1 either, honestly.
I like Cars
it's
1.
It's okay. I mean, it's fine.
Good chigga. Anyways, and then the other one.
This one I'm looking forward to. It's Kumail Nanjiani's breakout hit, probably. It's going to be The Big Sick.
Yeah, The Big Sick.
Which is an autobiographical thing about the real life meeting encounter with his wife, you know. So,
right.
Rom-com set
it's
that just, way.
It's interesting, yeah. So
it's a legit rom-com.
Yeah, I'm assuming minus his wife, but still him in it.
So
yeah, he's still an actor. I don't think Emily is actually an actor.
But it's funny. I'm just.
Oh, yeah, of course. I can't wait to hear stories about on the set and shit. You're going to kiss like you kiss me, huh?
Right, exactly. shit like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be
like,
fun.
Like, you're reenacting our lives without me.
Right. There might be a small chance that we might end up doing another film instead of The Big Sick that comes out actually on the 23rd. We just hope that it'll come out in theaters here and it won't be just like New York and LA.
Listen, guys, I picked Cars 3 for two main reasons. One,
it's a bad time.
Y'all motherfuckers, it was horror in this time. That's not even one of the reasons.
Good.
Y'all motherfuckers, more than likely watching this movie. Don't lie to yourself. Okay?
Don't lie to yourself.
You can watch it. It's going to be at your shitty little Cineplex that you have in your podunk town.
Wow. Wow.
Like, I'm talking about Luke here. Sorry.
Oh, you're talking about Alaska.
Yeah,
okay.
Alaska Luke. Anyways, Dad, and I'm taking my son to watch the movie. So.
I know you will. This is just like a twofer, right?
Yeah.
For me, I was completely going to avoid this movie. I didn't... So, thanks for making me watch it.
I was going to completely avoid It Comes at Night, so... Yeah.
Oh, look at that. But you know nothing about that movie.
Exactly. You don't know nothing about Cars 3.
I know about the last two, and I've fucking had enough, son. All right, that's it for our show. We're going to say goodbye now. See you later. Take a break. Go to Six Flags.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, I should get that in the ending.
You should. That'd be nice.
No. All right.
In case I don't see ya. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.